Good evening and welcome to the Aurora Grandy City Council meeting for Tuesday, May 24th, 2016. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Here.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Here.
Mayor Hill?
Here. Please join us in a moment of reflection. Thank you. This evening, we have with us tonight the Rotary Club of Aurora Grandy and Janet Wood. If you would come up and please lead us in the flag salute. If I could ask you all to stand for the flag salute.
Place your hands over your heart and join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. And would you, Janet, would you like to tell us about some of the things that Rotary's doing?
I would love to. Right now we're in the middle of our big motorcycle raffle where we'll make about $100,000. Most of that money goes back to the community. We scholarships for both the high schools. We just provided flags to all the schools. And we do lunches for homeless shelters. So our club is mostly dedicated to community outreach. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and for all that you do in the community. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, for agenda review, we have no closed session announcements this evening. Can we move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only, and all further readings be waived?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Tonight we have several special presentations. Item 6A is introduction of new city employees, and I'll ask our city manager to please make the presentation.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor Hill and City Council. We have some exciting introductions to make this evening with new employees and promotions. And I'd like to start off with Jill McPeak. And is Jill here? Jill? She's shy. Jill McPeak is our new capital improvement project manager, and if she looks familiar, it's because she's been working with the city as a contract engineer for about 20 years. She was raised in Lompoc and attended Allen Hancock College in Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, where she received her Bachelor of Science in Civil Engineering. She comes to us, as I said, with 20 years of contract staff services to many public agencies, but including Arroyo Grande, so she knows our city well. She has also worked for SLOCOG, where she gained knowledge of the region's transportation network and funding programs. She takes advantage of our nearly perfect year-round weather by camping, barbecuing, watching her stepson play sports, and just generally being outside. So please join me in welcoming Jill.
Welcome, Jill.
We're excited to have her. And then next, I'd like to introduce Jason Hodges, who is our new information technology specialist. Mr. Hodges starts his new position as information technology specialist on May 31st. He comes to the city with 10 years of experience supporting information technology systems in the banking industry and has lived and worked in the Five Cities area his entire life. He graduated from Arroyo Grande High School and has achieved multiple technical certifications. When not at work, he enjoys spending time with family, camping, barbecuing, swimming, snowboarding, baseball, and football. And I predict he's going to be very popular with our staff with his IT skills. So please join me in welcoming Jason.
Welcome, Jason.
And next, I'd like to introduce a promotion. And this is for Mr. Matt Downing, who began his career with the city of Arroyo Grande in 2010 as a planning intern. He was a baby planner. He received his master's degree in city and regional planning from Cal Poly while working for the city. And at that time, Mr. Downing's capability, knowledge, and work ethic were readily apparent, and he was hired as an assistant planner and subsequently advanced to associate planner. During his almost 6 years with the city, he has exemplified customer service and has worked on a number of important projects, including several general plan and specific plan amendments, the hospital campus expansion, the mobile vendor and vacation rental regulations, and the local hazard mitigation plan, among others. So pretty hefty resume of city projects under his belt. He has received his professional certification through the American Institute of Certified Planners, and we're very proud to have recently selected Mr. Downing to fill the planning manager position in the Community Development Department. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Matt.
So with that, we'll move on to the introduction of our police department ceremony. We have a full house this evening, which is really exciting. I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to introduce our police department's recognition ceremony for 2016. Tonight we will be honoring retirees, appointing a new officer, and celebrating the promotions of other officers. It feels like about half the department is getting promoted this evening, so lots of family and friends are here and pretty exciting. This event is one of the largest in the Arroyo Grande Police Department's history, and although I'm not happy to see our longtime police department staff who are retiring and who have done a great job for the city, I'm also very pleased that we have an opportunity to promote several of our police staff, and I'm very pleased with our new hires as well. So now I'd like to call on our Chief of Police to begin the ceremony. Chief Annibale?
There. Okay. Thank you all for coming tonight. This is really a great occasion for us. Okay. Try it again. Test. Okay. I start right here. Okay. I'm very pleased to be here tonight. This is a great ceremony for us all, and as you can see, overflow crowd. So thank you very much for being here and recognizing not only the service of our employees that have retired and even our four-legged employees that have retired, but also our new employees coming on board, promotions, including a police commander position, which is a very important management position. So first tonight, I want to recognize Commander Kevin McBride. First, Kevin McBride's not here tonight. He actually started his retirement job out at Diablo Canyon, and I guess he's a new employee. He's not a commander anymore, so he can't get off work. But I would like to recognize him and talk about his career a little bit, even though he's not here tonight, because Kevin, I think so many of you here know Kevin and know his experiences here in AG. Kevin began his career as a reserve police officer in December of 1983. He was promoted to a permanent full-time police officer in 1990 and was best known throughout his career as a canine handler. Kevin promoted to sergeant in 2000 and then commander in 2012. In addition to his many years of service as a canine handler and trainer, Kevin truly will be long remembered as a Arroyo Grande local here in our department. I want to recognize his wife, Joni, who is here with us tonight. Joni, you're in the back of the room. And Kevin had
Joni.
...32 years of service to the citizens of Arroyo Grande, so I'm very proud to recognize Kevin tonight. I hope he's doing well tonight at Diablo. So our next retirement is an interesting one. This is one we'll all regret but also remember as he comes into the room. And as I teased Kevin, I said, this year two old dogs are retiring. Our canine, Gregor, and there he is. He gets all, that's why people show up, is for Gregor. Gregor joined the department with AGPD in March of 2010. He was barely a two-year-old pup at the time he got hired. He was assigned with his handler, Shane Day, and soon Gregor distinguished himself as a very smart and uncompromising canine partner. During his career, Gregor is responsible for the... Gregor was responsible for the apprehension of more than 20. Okay. During his career, Gregor was responsible for the apprehension of more than 20 suspects, the recovery of narcotics in vehicles, houses, and school lockers. Gregor regularly competed in statewide canine competitions and took home several awards, including second place award in the state for open area searching in the annual Cops West canine competition. He also took fourth place. Think about that, how many people are competing in Cops West. Fourth place in the narcotics search event. Gregor has also provided services to many, many local and regional agencies, including the FBI and the Secret Service, for some special details they have had. And he has been an outstanding canine, probably the best we've ever had in recent years, and we're really going to miss him. However, unfortunately, Gregor has become ill with an autoimmune disease, and in the past few months, that affects his joints, and they're very much weakening. So due to his medical condition, he's going to be honorably retired from the Aurora Grande Police Department, and his name will be added to the department's Wall of Honor. And just as a side fact, Gregor's 8 years old right now, and everybody's thinking, well, he's not that old. In dog years for a German Shepherd, Gregor is 61 years old, and he served for 47 years for the police department. So we have two plaques, one for Shane and Gregor, and then also one that will be in the police department hung on the Wall of Honor to recognize Gregor for his work. Congratulations, buddy. And no, his tail's not supposed to be like that. Poor Gregor's having a little bit of a hard time staying home and not coming to work. And so he's been chewing on his tail. When he sees his handler get up and go to work, he just doesn't understand why he can't go. Okay, in addition to retirements, as chief, one of the best things I have to do is introduce new officers to the department. It's great to enjoy recognizing them, but also introducing them to the community and their new law enforcement careers. So could Elia Esparza please step forward? And Elia, we're going to change this around a little bit because of technical difficulty, so if I can get you to come over here, please. Elia was born and raised in Santa Maria and the youngest of four. Elia graduated from Pioneer Valley High School in 2010 and continued her education at Allen Hancock College. In the fall of 2013, she transferred to Cal State University Fresno, and there she began pursuing her bachelor's degree. Elia completed the post-law enforcement academy at Fresno City College and was a reserve deputy with Fresno County Sheriff's Office. She recently graduated, and I think it was this weekend, wasn't it? Recently graduated from Fresno State with a bachelor's degree in criminology with an emphasis in law enforcement. We've had several officers come from that program in Fresno where you can both get your bachelor's degree and attend the academy, and it's been a great recruiting ground for us. So we're very happy to have her. And tonight, our assistant city clerk, Kitty Norton, will give her the oath of office.
I, Elia Esparza, do solemnly swear. That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
That I will bear fair truth and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
For purpose of evasion.
For purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties upon which I am about to enter.
The duties I am about to enter.
Congratulations.
One of the things that we do as a tradition here is a couple of things. First, Elia, you can have whoever you pick come up to pin you for your badge. I understand it's your mother. So if she would like to come up, hopefully she practiced a little bit. And if you can join her over there. Then the other thing is, this is what Elia really wants to get, but I also have in the envelope a couple of things that we give each new officer and each person promoting also, so you'll see this throughout the program. She'll not only get her badge and ID and those kinds of things, but the most important thing to me in here is they get a letter of expectations outlining exactly what we expect of each employee and each officer, each supervisor. So, Elia, this is for you, but I'll give that to you in a moment. And this is for your mom. Don't yell. Got it? She's not yelling, so you're still doing good. A little bit of practice pinning the badge on. Okay, the next one I would like to introduce is our first promotions tonight, and these are for senior officer positions. Senior police officer is the first step in supervision in our department. As a senior officer, in the absence of a sergeant, they serve as a field supervisor and direct the actions of other police officers in the field. Additionally, they serve as the assistant watch commander in the city and can supervise an entire shift when filling in for the sergeant and manage the patrol squad that they're assigned to. So the two promotions to senior officer tonight are first, Zach Ayala. As Zach comes up, I will read about him. Zach Ayala joined the Rio Grande Police Department in 2009 after serving with the UC Santa Barbara Police Department. Zach has also served as a field training officer, a force options instructor, a canine handler, our other canine that's still in service, in addition to serving as an acting senior officer. Next, I'd like to call up Jeremy Burns. Jeremy Burns joined the department in 2009 after serving for many years as a police explorer and cadet. And I have to tell you, I know Jeremy's getting tired of hearing this, but it's unbelievable that as we watch Jeremy grow from an explorer to a cadet to a police officer and now a senior officer. It's fantastic. He's served as a field training officer, a DUI instructor, and also as an acting senior officer. So as I grab the badges on the other side and the envelope, if you can ask your parties that are going to pin you to come on up. So we have a couple of things here. Okay, you're doing your dad. There you go. You're doing your husband. And here they get their two stripes that they'll be wearing on their uniform. I'll hand you those. Okay, go. This is your chance. I give you permission. Great job. Congratulations, guys. Congratulations, Jeremy. Here's both your notice. And your expectations, right there.
Good job, man. Congratulations.
We also had tonight a third senior officer being promoted, but because of previously arranged, they don't know when they're going to get promoted. They participate in the process, and then they don't know if they're selected. And he was out of the area, out of the state, actually, on vacation, unable to make it. And that's Stephen Doherty. So I do want to read about Stephen Doherty so you can hear about the caliber of people that we have in the organization and how they begin to start their supervisory experience. Stephen Doherty joined the AGPD in 2011 after serving several years with the Los Angeles Police Department. He worked as an explorer, training advisor, and is currently working as the department's motorcycle traffic officer. How many people out there have seen Stephen Doherty out there on a regular basis? Hopefully none of you. Stephen Doherty is another one with Jeremy Burns. It was part of that all-star class of explorers that we had that have done very well for themselves in their law enforcement career. So even though Stephen's not here, we did want to recognize him tonight. The next promotions are for police sergeant. And sergeant position is one of my favorite positions in the police department. It was definitely my favorite position, other than chief, of course. Sergeant is best described in police departments and has been described as the backbone of the agency. If you have good sergeants, you have a great organization. We have good sergeants, and we have a great organization. So the sergeant is a squad leader, a supervisor, serves as the watch commander in the citywide in the absence of any command staff, and as a field supervisor, the sergeant directs officers, coordinates tactics, and develops staff assigned to their squad. The sergeant plays the biggest role on police officers, on their development, their training, and, of course, keeping them safe on the street than anybody in the department. And so tonight we'd like to recognize two people for promotions of sergeant. So first, Shane Day, could you come forward? Shane joined the department in 2001 as a reserve officer, then in 2002 as a full-time police officer. Shane has served as a senior officer, a field training officer, arrest control instructor, canine handler, as you all know, and as an acting sergeant. Now can Jason Castillo come forward, please? Jason Castillo joined the department in 2007 after serving with the Guadalupe Police Department. Jason has served as a senior officer also, a field training officer, and holds a master's degree in public administration from Cal State Northridge, and has also served as an acting sergeant. Both new sergeants will be receiving their stripes and their badges tonight, along with their supervisory letter of expectations, so please read it. And for the supervisors, it's also an article in there, a 19-page article that's easy reading, called Helpful Hints for Law Enforcement Supervisors. I suggest you take a good look at it. So let me grab that while your spouses or people that are pinning come on up. There's your badge. Okay, guys, turn around so you can. Oh, well, we don't see you in a minute. Is that his badge?
Don't underestimate.
Okay, there's your stripes.
Thank you.
There's your stripes. If you guys can turn for a quick picture, that'd be great. Sneak up. Congratulations. Shane, you made it, buddy.
Sure.
Way to go, man. Good job.
Okay, the final promotion for tonight. The final promotion. Final promotion is one that clearly has a large impact on the police organization, there's no doubt. That is for the commander rank. Will Mike Martinez please come forward, please? The position of police commander is part of a three-person management team of the police department, the others being the second commander, Commander Bo Pryor in the back of the room, and myself as the chief of police. The commander is responsible for one of two sides of the house, as we call it, either patrol services or support services. In this role, the commander is responsible for all the activities within the command. That includes planning, organizing, budgeting, supervision, equipment, and, of course, the development of the staff. Commanders truly are the guardians of the police department's image and ethics, and they ensure the adherence of policies and procedures and practices. In the absence of the chief of police, and this is the important one, they serve as the acting chief of police and work hand-in-hand with the chief on a daily basis. So let me tell you a little bit about Mike Martinez. And his family's here tonight. They could tell us a lot more about Mike Martinez. Mike Martinez joined the AGPD in 2005 after serving in the Grover Beach Police Department. He has served as a motor officer, school resource officer, SWAT team leader and scout, patrol sergeant, detective sergeant, and the administrative sergeant. He holds a bachelor's degree in leadership from Bellevue University, is a graduate of the California Post Supervisory Course, the Allen Hancock College Leadership Development Course, and the department-sponsored administrative mentoring and strength-based leadership programs. Mike also serves as an Academy Firearms and Force Options instructor and contributes to many recruits' training as a firearms instructor. Commander Martinez will receive his single star rank insignia tonight, his badge and identification, and of course a memo of expectations for commanders, because they have specific expectations also. So tonight, I believe Lorena, your wife, is going to pin you tonight. So when she comes up, I will get the badge. Same badge carries a lot of weight, though. Once it's through. I know. 38 years, I haven't figured out an easy way to do this. Perfect. Congratulations, Mike. Hang on. Expectations before you even shake hands. Get ahead there, buddy. Congratulations.
Way to go, Mike.
No, right to the shaking hands of council. I see what's up. See how that's going to work. That concludes our ceremonies for tonight. Thank you very much for all your attendance. We have overflow crowd, and it's great to see the support for the police department like that. So a lot of us are going to go outside to take some pictures, and then the council will continue. But thank you again for coming.
Thank you very much, Chief, and welcome to our new employees, and congratulations to all of our promotees. I am fortunate to work at Diablo Canyon, where I get to see Kevin McBride fairly regularly, and he's doing very well there with our security staff. So let's take a 5-minute break, and we will continue with the program. Okay, we'll come back to order. Item 7 on the agenda is community comments and suggestions. This is public comment period. It's an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, and suggestions on matters within the purview of the council that are not scheduled on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action on matters that are not on the agenda. And in response to your comments, we may direct city staff to assist or coordinate with you. A council member may state a desire to meet with you, or it may be the desire of the council to place your issue or matter on a future agenda. So for those items that are on the agenda this evening, we will have opportunity to comment as the council addresses each of those items. So this is your opportunity to comment on things that are not on the agenda, if anyone would like to do that. Linda.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, and staff. My name is Linda Osti. Lord, hear our prayers as we remember. O Father of all, as Memorial Day nears, we pray for those who courageously laid down their lives for the cause of freedom. Grant them peace and let perpetual light shine upon them. May the example of their sacrifices inspire in us the selfless love of your Son, our Lord Jesus Christ. Grant that through your passion, death, and resurrection, that they may share the joy of your heavenly kingdom. Bless their families of our fallen troops and fill their homes and their lives with strength and peace. We are also thankful for our public servants, especially our police and fire. We pray for this in Christ our Lord's name. Amen.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to comment?
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council, staff. Aaron Hankel, 196 South Alpine, here in Rio Grande. I have a couple things. Recently, in front of the shopping center that's being redone on Grand and Elm, there was a stencil put out to keep clear by one of the driveways. I think this is a bad precedence for this city to do. This is for a private development. If they would have developed and looked at their traffic flow on their property, that wouldn't be required on our street. That's going to create more tax issues now for the state, for the city. The city's going to have to maintain that and keep it in perpetuity. We shouldn't be doing this for private developments. It's their job to make sure that their internal circulation does not affect the city streets, not the city street take care of their problem. So that's one thing. Another thing, our city, I'm very proud, they want to be very bike friendly. But in doing so, they don't do things completely. Recently, well, 6-8 months ago, we added a bike lane in front of the high school. Currently, that bike lane does not meet the California MUTCD as it should have been done. I've talked to several people, including one of the council members, about what you do when you're on a bike and you come up to a red light and it doesn't change to make it green for you to go. They said they sit and watch traffic and they look for a space when it's safe to go. So by us not identifying the problem and taking care of signals the way we're supposed to, according to the MUTCD, and I'll hand this all to you, and one to the staff, we are creating bicyclists, we are encouraging bad habits from our bicyclists. We're encouraging them to run red lights, which is a violation of the California Vehicle Code, which is citable. So if we're going to call ourselves bike-friendly, then we really need to do it. And we need to apply all the rules. Not just the ones that suit us. They're there for everybody, and they need to be done. Otherwise, it creates a big liability problem for the city. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the comment. Would anyone else like to address the council items that are not on the agenda this evening?
Here to discuss the grocery store or lack of grocery stores in our town. Higgins closed their doors on 11/15. Today, nothing has been done. I've written every one of the council, I've written our city manager about this numerous times. I've been told that things are being done to get us a store. So when I haven't seen anything done, I did a public records request. I'm amazed that until April 29th is the first sign of any correspondence between our city staff and the people who have Investec, who have the property, or anything to do with getting that place occupied. I understand that our city doesn't get to choose occupants, but to be told over and over the city is doing things, and I have proof, and I've got it up there to you, two dates, February 29 and 5/10. I would like to know, is the city looking at getting a grocery store anywhere else? I happen to cook. I cook a lot. I cook from scratch. Mr. Guthrie suggested that I go to Santa Barbara County, that I go to Costco, Food for Less, or Whole Foods. You know, they don't have a full-service deli or meat counter or bakery, and so you end up going to different stores. I like my tax dollars to stay here in this town where I live, where I want it to prosper. And so I would like to ask that staff does get in touch with me because I'd like to know what's going on. You know, there was JJ's at one point. They're no longer here. There was Spencer's Food. They're no longer here. There's Cookie Crock. They're no longer here. There was an Albertsons. They're gone. Higgins is gone. I mean, we need revenue. I was told that the revenue from Albertsons was really small. They were upward of $600,000 a week. That's a lot of tax revenue. That was one of our top five tax revenues, as I understand, from the city. We need revenue. Let's work together and try to figure this out, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the council?
Julie London, Arroyo Grande. There appears to be some juvenile schoolyard behavior going on with a few of the council members. There are important issues to be discussed with the public that are being delayed week after week and getting on the agenda, yet somehow this most important, most recent attack shows up as old business on tonight's agenda. Since it's not being discussed prior, I fail to see why it would be discussed as old business or even discussed at all for that matter. Let's stop this whining and get on to serious business to help bring Arroyo Grande to a cohesive, functioning city.
Thank you. Is there any other comment?
Good evening, council members, Mayor Hill and staff. Beatrice Spencer, Arroyo Grande. I, too, wanted to talk about the firestorm that occurred recently. And I think it's easy to see that it's pretty obvious we're in an election year. Why else would the effort Mayor Hill made to reach out to the FTC regarding the empty Albertsons building become a political football? I say this is politically motivated for several reasons. Number one, there was no backlash when Mayor Hill attended Board of Supervisors meetings or met with Senator Monning regarding the sanitation district litigation we ratepayers are footing the bill for. Where was the uproar when Mayor Hill met with the chair of the Regional Water Board on behalf of ratepayers? No, not only was there not a peep from any other council member, there were no thanks for his continued efforts to stop litigating. With the exception of Councilmember Brown, no one shows the slightest concern over the money ratepayers have been forced to pay, fighting a fine we know we owe for a sewage spill we know occurred. Where is your interest in this matter? Who among you has expressed your displeasure when Mayor Hill reported in this very chamber that he had attended SLOCOG meetings and received their reassurance that funds allocated for Briscoe Interchange were indeed still available? I'm willing to bet at that point he acted on behalf of our city as our mayor. He reported back to you at the next meeting when there was information to report. Were any of you offended when you weren't notified until after Mayor Hill had worked to secure temporary shelter for the homeless again this winter? How angry were you when Mayor and Mrs. Hill were thanked for volunteering at the last minute in order to keep the shelter open on one occasion? Were you upset to learn the mayor insisted on hiring HEP for increased transparency at the sanitation district meetings? Did our former mayor want us to know what was going on there? Do you think you should have been notified when our mayor began holding meet and greets over coffee and donuts with residents in local parks? Mayor Hill working on behalf of the people of Arroyo Grande is nothing new, and it certainly is not brought on by the fact that there is an election in November. What is disturbing is that some are now only concerned about one instance of his reaching out for answers or solutions. The claims of favoritism are baseless. It makes absolutely no sense that an inquiry or correspondence would have omitted the name of the bidder of record on that property or the word mayor. Yes, the council functions as a body, but that should not preclude each and every one of you from functioning as individuals and working on behalf of the residents of Arroyo Grande.
Thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to address the council? Okay, hearing none at this. I'm sorry. Yes, please.
My name is Michael Dries. I live in 543 of Via Bandolero in Rio Grande. Same area where Spencer's live. And I have just a little difference of opinion is that I was brought up that two wrongs don't make a right. So the fact that maybe the council didn't react to the mayor's earlier givings, that I still think that, to me, just living in Arroyo Grande for 28 years and following the councils for a lot of the times, that we really need to be more open about it. I think that if anybody, I'm just a citizen of Arroyo Grande, and I have to tell you, when I heard that maybe a letter was sent in preference for Spencer's, and I used to go to Spencer's. Okay. And can I speak? I didn't interrupt you.
He has the floor, please.
And so it just bothered me at that time that that's not being open and saying, hey, I'm the mayor, and if I can do whatever I want to do because I'm the mayor. But in this town, I just felt like you were maybe being a little preference to a friend of yours. Okay. I used to go to Spencer's, so I'm not saying because I don't like Spencer's, I just think we got to be open. If another store wants to come in, we got to be open for another store. Okay, it's hard to have a grocery store in Arroyo Grande. A lot of stores have come in and gone out. It's hard. So I hope this time we get somebody that can do the job, give us low prices. Okay, and so that's, I just got to tell you, I felt that it wasn't being fair to other council members to say, hey, it's political. It's not political. If you want to say anything you want, you have the right to, but I think you have to be open about it and say you do have a preference for somebody. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Would anyone else like to comment?
Cynthia Larcio, or a Grandy, long-time, well, lifetime resident. I read the article. I read it all. I saw no preference whatsoever. Everybody knows the bidder of record was John Spencer. So I don't understand why anybody would see that there was preference. No one else was listed as bidder of record. So there shouldn't be an issue and it shouldn't be a problem.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to comment?
I wasn't going to talk. This is Colleen Dries, 543 Via Bandolero. I read the article also. I don't understand if a mayor sends a letter, why he wouldn't copy the other board members. I don't understand that. If I do something and I'm on the board of the DAR, I tell everybody on my board is copied. I don't understand that. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much for your comment. Would anyone else like to comment?
Tom Goss, Roy Brandy. I was going to hold this off until the item came up later on, but I think considering everybody else's stuff, I'll go through it now. I'm going to read through this so I don't say anything out of context. It interested me that on yesterday's Dave Congleton show, self-proclaimed activist Leanne Akins was a guest and stated that Mayor Hill was not writing to the FTC in his official capacity as mayor. I disagree. In the letter to the FTC dated 2/23/16, Mayor Hill states in his first sentence, "I am writing as mayor of the city of Arroyo Grande, California, population 17,000. He then states his concerns regarding the Hagen Albertsons building. At the end of his letter, he signs it Jim Hill, Mayor, City of Arroyo Grande, and uses the City Hall address as a return correspondence address. By making these statements, he is declaring that he is writing in his official capacity as mayor and not as a private citizen, whether he wrote it on city letterhead or not. The mayor's letter to the FTC does not represent my interests. I shopped at the Arroyo Grande Spencer's Market a few times, but generally found that they had higher prices and a limited selection, so I shopped at Albertsons or Vaughn's instead. I also noticed that the Arroyo Grande Spencer's usually had far fewer customers than the other full-service grocery stores." The mayor states in his letter that the FTC to the FTC that he wants to restore competitiveness to Arroyo Grande. How can bringing in a store with a tradition of higher prices and a more limited selection be competitive? If anything, like Hagen, it will drive people away to other stores searching for the savings that allow them to feed their families on a budget. I would prefer, personally, an Albertsons, a Vaughn's, a Rouse, maybe even a California Fresh Market. I also feel that it appears there was a conflict of interest promoting Spencer's Market in the FTC letter. Spencer's Market has been a big supporter of Mayor Hill during his mayoral campaign and beyond. In his letter to the FTC, the mayor could have simply stated that he was worried there might be efforts by Albertsons to retake the Hagen store, which could create an anti-competitive environment that forced the sale in the first place. But he didn't. He promoted Spencer's Market and only Spencer's Market. Plus, when the mayor made Barbara Harmon's email and his response to it public, he had it delivered to the New Times by Beatrice Spencer. That reeks of conflict of interest. Okay, the remainder I was going to read off during the thing, but I think I got my point across. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to comment?
She wants to speak real quick.
Leanne Akins, self-proclaimed community activist. Actually, that was the title that Dave Congleton gave me yesterday on the radio show. Spencer's Market is not only the only bidder of record, it's the only fish on the hook. So how can you show preference for one fish on the hook? Thank you.
I actually wasn't going to speak up here tonight, but I'm appalled. I'm appalled at the tone that is being taken against staff and council. This is a pretty nice town. A lot of us grew up here. We'd like it to be a nice town. The folks who are kibitzing, who are anti-council, anti-staff, I'd like to see them this Saturday, volunteering to put on the Strawberry Festival. Any Saturday, volunteering. This is a town of volunteers. We do a lot of cool stuff in this town, and it's all done by volunteers. Instead of coming to city council and kvetching about one thing or another, get involved. Help make the town a better place. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Would anyone else like to address the council?
Good evening. My name is Steve Hollister, and I'm an Arroyo Grande resident. I have 2 points to make. One is, if an elected official chooses to write a letter as a private citizen, they are free to do so, and more power to them. As an elected official, a higher standard applies. To speak on behalf of the city is what you've been elected to do, whether you're a council person or a mayor. And I expect you to uphold that sacred elected oath. Secondly, as a commercial property owner myself, I would be very upset to have the city try to dictate who I should lease to and under what terms. This does not speak well to a supportive business climate. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Would anyone else like to address the council?
Good evening, Mayor Hill, council people. So I would just like to say, I obviously, as I think everybody here, would really appreciate another great grocery store in town, whoever that is. And I don't really have a preference wherever it comes from. But I appreciate whatever efforts have been done by the council and staff to help that process. But I wanted to explain just a couple of things that maybe are misunderstood. And when Higgins bought the business from Albertsons, and there was a divestiture of quite a few of the properties, Higgins didn't have enough money to effectively be able to buy all the real estate. So they double escrowed it, effectively sold the real estate back to two unrelated companies, have nothing to do with Higgins, other than they bought their property with the expectation to collect the rent. In the case of Roy Grandy, that ground, that the building is owned by this new company that Higgins sold it to. The ground is owned by Investec. Investec is not involved in the leasing of that building and can't. And it is when they bought that building, they negotiated a rent that, including insurance and taxes, was close to $160,000 per month. So it's an extraordinarily expensive lease. Now, that includes all the triple nets that were there. I think it's 156, but that was for the original lease. Currently, there. Those people that have bought that building are desperately out trying to find tenants. There is nobody more motivated than them to get somebody here. And because they are paying a mortgage payment, and they are paying rent to Investec for that space. So my only thing that I would ask is that you work with the owners of the building and try to help in recruiting somebody that comes into the space. I would also say is that going to the feds to put a notice out that maybe there was a conflict is not productive in that, from my perspective. To say, well, we're worried, you know, and there was a divestiture between Albertsons and Safeway and how many are in each area. But going out and saying, gosh, should you be concerned about that? If Albertsons was coming here, I'd be all for Albertsons. I think the community would be. So casting a doubt kills the landlord and potentially kills the transaction for the city as well, for that tenant. So that's all, and good luck on this, because I hope we can succeed.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to address the council?
Ashley Akers, Rio Grande resident. Tonight I'm speaking on behalf of Adam Verdin, who couldn't be here tonight. I'm speaking his comments on transparency and leadership. Transparency, the mayor has a right to express his opinion, but when he does so as, quote, as the mayor of Arroyo Grande, the public and his fellow council members have a right to know when he's expressing them to outside agencies. This is called transparency. If you run on it, you shouldn't run from it. Leadership. A good leader would have responded directly to his fellow council member when asked a question. Let's not politicize the issue and attempt to punish the person asking questions by having supporters attack her at events, on the radio, and behind online pseudonyms or here at City Council. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Would anyone else like to address the council?
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. The one concern I have is precedence, in that if a letter is written on behalf of a business owner by the city or city representative, then what's to stop another business owner coming to the city and say, well, you wrote a letter for this entity, I want you to write a letter on my behalf to whatever entity. So I think it can get confusing, and it's probably better to speak as an individual. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to address the council? Items not on the agenda.
OK.
Okay, hearing no more at this time, we will move on to item number 8, the City Manager's Report. City Manager Thompson.
Thank you, Mayor Hill. I do have several items to report on, including some information regarding potential grocery stores, which might be of interest. So I know you'll listen to the first part of my report to hear that part. First of all, Board and Commission report. On May 17th, the Planning Commission had a workshop on the draft EIR for the East Cherry Avenue specific plan. And they will also be holding a special meeting on May 31st to consider a medical marijuana ordinance allowing limited cultivation and deliveries. The Traffic Commission this month also reviewed the East Branch streetscaping project, and they asked for reconsideration of several components and to review those at a future meeting. The Traffic Commission heard considerations regarding the LaPointe and Crown Hill neighborhood circulation issues and recommended that the intersection at each East Branch Street, Wasna Road, Corbett Canyon Road, Stanley Avenue, and Crown Hill be included in the city's capital improvement plan funding program for intersection improvement. So we'll see more about that in the future. On June 10th, the Historic Resources Committee will consider initiation of an historic resource designation for the Methodist Campground and Tabernacle. Our Swinging Bridge has reopened just in time for the Strawberry Festival. And there is currently a limit of 5 persons at a time allowed on the bridge without supervision and a limit of 15 people at a time with supervision, which we will have during the Strawberry Festival. Coffee with the City Manager resumes. We're doing this once a month, so that the next meeting will be June 6th at 8 a.m. at Red Dirt Coffee, and everyone is welcome to attend. City Council goal setting. We have 2 special meetings scheduled for our City Council goal setting process. The first meeting will take place on Monday, June 13th, and will include a presentation on what the city has accomplished this fiscal year, what projects are currently in process, and what projects are planned to take place or continue into next fiscal year. Basically, it's a matter of taking stock of where we are and where we're going. That will lay the groundwork for the next special meeting on June 27th, which will be the actual council goal-setting session. And we're looking forward to receiving public input and to having a productive process that will result in identification of City Council goals for the next fiscal year. I wanted to give you a report on economic development activity during the current fiscal year. And we've been focusing a good deal of energy on this topic, and we're seeing increased activity and results. There are lots of exciting things happening in Arroyo Grande. In terms of significant commercial development, we have over 1,000 square feet of commercial and hotel space that has been approved this fiscal year, including the Village Inn, a 54-room boutique hotel in the Village, a mixed-use project at Cortland and Grand that includes 3 new commercial buildings and 36 single-family residences, a new 42,000-square-foot medical office building next to Arroyo Grande Hospital, a new mixed-use office building at Paulding Court, a retail warehouse building on East Grand, and new commercial space at the Arroyo Grande Shopping Center. And speaking of the Arroyo Grande Shopping Center, they are undergoing major interior and exterior remodeling and expansion, as we all know. And last week, I had the opportunity to meet with the property owner and tour the site. The new Starbucks is doing great, and AG Bakery and Domino's have both successfully relocated within the center. Rite Aid and CarQuest will be remodeling their spaces, and new tenants to the center include Chipotle Grill, Five Guys Hamburgers, a cellular store, and a deli. Additionally, the shopping center owner is in discussion with multiple potential grocery store tenants to occupy the former Cookie Crock market space. And the owner anticipates that an announcement will be made on the grocery store within the next several months. The shopping center owner also mentioned to me how much he enjoyed working with Community Development Director Teresa McClish and her team on the various projects in his center. Higgins. I know there has been much interest in the Higgins vacancy and a desire for a new grocery store in that location. When we learned about the Higgins closure several months ago, I contacted commercial real estate brokers who represent multiple retail clients to inform them, to make them aware of the vacancy and our interest in having it filled as quickly as possible. Staff has also been in contact with the shopping center owner and the leasing company periodically to offer any assistance that the city can provide in tenanting the vacant space. We recently received news that lease negotiations with a new grocery store tenant at the former Hagen site should be confirmed in mid-June. I know there has been some concerns expressed regarding a loss of sales tax with the Hagen's vacancy, but this has been relatively minor since it has been offset by customers, who, you know, former Hagen's customers going elsewhere within Arroyo Grande and also outside of Arroyo Grande as well. We estimate the total loss of sales tax this fiscal year due to the Hagen's closure to be about $25,000. So not really a huge hit to the city, and certainly worth the price to get a good long-term tenant in that space. And so the good news is that within the coming year, we should have two new grocery stores in Arroyo Grande. There are a number of other commercial buildings that have remodeled or are in the process, including the commercial center at East Grand near Halcyon, and in the Village, the Mason Bar and Restaurant, which is expanding, the Villa Cantina, a new business that's doing great, Marcella's, another new business, and the Chevron Station, which has remodeled. Also in the planning stages is a new 100-room hotel that is being reviewed as part of the East Cherry Avenue specific plan. Also want to talk a little bit about business development and outreach that we've been doing. We've been developing resources to help our business community by establishing partnerships to provide business development workshops such as the Google and Yelp workshop held in April, and we're planning another one on QuickBooks this summer. We're scheduling a series of business roundtable discussions with representatives from the real estate development and the banking communities to discuss how the city can continue to improve our business environment for those industries. We also have been working on identification of development opportunities. We've had interdepartmental discussions conducted to identify problem areas and opportunities, initially between community development and our police officers, and now in May and June, we have discussions between community development staff and our public works crew. We also have conducted special meetings of the Parking Commission to address parking challenges in the Village. And I meet monthly with the Chamber of Commerce Government Relations Committee to share information about economic development activities and to hear their thoughts. I attend the monthly Economic Vitality Corporation board meetings, including specific meetings on broadband access in our community. I also participate in the Visit San Luis Obispo Advisory Board, which is the countywide TBID, and I attend our local TBID meetings to provide support. As far as infrastructure, which of course is a big part of economic development, we have our East Branch streetscape plan moving forward, and that's extending the streetscape improvements in the Village east to Paulding Circle. We also have the Halcyon Road Complete Street Project underway in terms of design. That's another grant-funded project for the segment of roadway from Highway 1 to 101. That project includes safety, traffic calming, and streetscape amenities. In terms of studies underway, we have several. A review of our parking regulations is in process. Also, we have a request for proposal for the East Grand Avenue corridor plan so that we can plan to make some improvements on the west side of town. We're working on an update of our signage regulations. I also didn't mention that we're working with some of our shopping center owners regarding signage to try to help them have some more flexibility in the signage regulations to promote their businesses. And we're also working on streamlining our entitlements review process. In terms of cultural and community activities, we have a lot. We're hosting the Arroyo Grande and Bloom Symposium this fall in Arroyo Grande, which is very exciting. When I say we, that's not the city per se. It's Arroyo Grande and Bloom. And then festivals. We have 5 annual festivals here in Arroyo Grande that help promote our economic environment. The Strawberry Festival, which is this weekend and is our largest event of the year. The Harvest Festival, the Car Show, the Halloween Festival, and Christmas in the Village. And then tonight on the council's agenda is a new event, which is a new beer and food festival in Heritage Square Park. In terms of historic heritage, we have a few current projects or recent projects, the repair and maintenance of the swinging bridge and also rehabilitation of our historic Bridge Street Bridge. And that concludes my comments on economic development, just kind of an update for the council. And I also wanted to mention upcoming city council agendas. We have some really full agendas coming up. On June 14th, we'll be talking about our revised medical marijuana ordinance, including regulations that allow delivery and limited cultivation. It's taken some time to craft language around the regulations on delivery, because we will be one of the first cities in California to regulate delivery. Additionally, we wanted staff to meet with the medical marijuana delivery companies to get their thoughts on best practices, and it's taken some time for Chief Annibale to get that scheduled and completed, and I think that was done today. We will have all of our research completed soon, and the Planning Commission will consider the item on May 31st, and as I said, it will come to Council on June 14th. And also on June 14th will be consideration of a master fee schedule update and next year's budget. And that concludes my long report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for the city manager?
I have one. On the tentative agenda for the regular meeting on June 14th, I have the email that you had sent the council about the two meetings coming up in June, in addition to the special meetings. I'm concerned about the June 14th because of all the hefty items that are on that agenda. And so I wanted to, and I don't know how much we can talk about it, but we can't talk about it after we leave. And so I'm trying to figure out, is there anything we can do to alleviate? I can potentially see that meeting going till 2 a.m. with the big items. 5 closed session possible items, as well as the FCFA budget, the R budget, the user fee study implementation master fee schedule, medical marijuana, and CDBG funding. So I could see medical marijuana taking 4 hours. And so any suggestions?
Sure, a couple options on that. We could either conduct a special meeting separately just to discuss medical marijuana, or we could push it to our second meeting in July. We could also start the council meeting earlier, which would sort of be a special meeting in advance of the special or the regular council meeting on the 14th. So, of course, we're open to any suggestions the council has. We do have a really, you know, packed workload coming up over the next couple months, and difficult scheduling given just all of the meetings that are taking place and vacations and so forth. But happy to hear the council's interest in terms of scheduling.
Are there any of those items on the 14th that are time sensitive?
I think that everything that's on the 14th pretty much needs to stick, except medical marijuana. And Kitty's pulling out the advanced agenda so I can take a look at it. So the CDBG funding item, I don't think that will be a lengthy item. The medical marijuana will be lengthy. Consideration of the 2016-17 budget really needs to be on that agenda, because the next agenda is just as full. And then our users' study fee implementation and master fee schedule update also need to be on that agenda, because that will be wrapped into the budget. So I think the only alternative is to remove the medical marijuana item and push that off into July. So perhaps we can discuss that. Yeah, since it's not agendized for discussion, it's difficult for council to discuss that topic. But I would suggest that this Friday, at our regular meeting with the mayor and the mayor pro tem, when we review the agenda, that we can discuss it at that time, and we have the input from at least one council member that the heavy agenda on that date is a concern.
Thank you for that.
And I also needed to remind everyone that the Five Cities Fire Authority is in preliminary proposals with the budget, and my intent was to also try to pigeonhole that in for the 14th based on the timing of needing to get that approved by the end of the fiscal year, so just as a heads up.
Yay. As far as the medical marijuana issue, the portion that has to go to the Planning Commission, is that related to growing or delivery or both?
That's the amendment that will then come to Council. They go to Planning Commission first, so it has to do with, it is both, yes.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
I have a couple also.
Mayor Pro Tem.
City Manager, can you just remind me, or maybe I didn't hear you, on the East Grand streetscape, what is the funding source on that? And is there a grant? I recall there might have been some grant funding, or?
That's one we didn't get the grant funding for. We did have an application. We did budget some money to perform the master plan, East Grand Avenue master plan. So we put out an RFP a while ago, didn't get bites, and so we're revamping it and putting it out again. I think we'll, timing-wise, we'll be more successful in getting some, soliciting some consultants to bid on it.
Okay, thank you. And then the one that's going on up here by Paulding, that's the grant-funded one?
Yes.
Okay, so that has been secured for quite some time, as far as I... Okay, just trying to get my streetscapes straight. And then the last question I have, this one is for the city manager. I just wanted to bring to the attention, in the past week, there's been citizens that have brought to my attention some concerns that they heard that the city was actually pursuing with Walmart to expand Walmart to add groceries to that. And so since grocery stores seem to be very much a critical item in our community, there was just some concern. The individual indicated that several people had approached them related to that. There was a little bit of concern about that, and I didn't know if there was anything that you could relay or maybe address for them related to their inquiry to me.
That's new information to me. It's not on our radar in terms of Walmart wanting to expand and add grocery at their store, and we have not pursued promoting that at Walmart.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that clarification. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you. I just needed some clarity on the swinging bridge in terms of the capacity. Can you go over why that is? Is that a temporary thing, why they're still doing work, or what's that about?
Quincy Engineering did their analysis of the bridge as it currently stands, and with the current configuration and the repairs that we've done, those are the limits that they've set.
Permanently or just now? Like
until we would do additional analysis and work on the bridge. So likely we'll be coming back to the council after further analysis has been done with additional suggestions. But for now, with the repairs that we've done, 5 people at a time, without supervision, and then 15 with supervision.
I wonder how that gets enforced or policed, but anyway.
Well, we have signage up right now that indicates 5 people at a time, and then during special events like the Strawberry Festival, we'll have a monitor at each end of the bridge, and we'll have one-way traffic with only 15 people at a time.
Okay, great. And then just lastly, because it was brought up about agendas, and you already know how I feel about heavy agendas, I'm just letting everybody know I'm not going to vote to go past 11. I'm not a big fan of special meetings either because I think it limits public participation, but if we have to do that, we have to do that. But I'm not going to go. It's hard to make really good decisions late at night, at least for me, and I want to be able to make good decisions, and so I'm not going to be voting to go past 11 on heavy agendas, so just an FYI. Thank you.
And I appreciate that. We try to balance the agendas as much as we can, but sometimes items that are time-sensitive pop up, and we just end up with heavy agendas. So looking at special meetings or other ways to address those heavy agendas, certainly we're open to that.
Thank you very much for the report. We'll move on to the consent agenda. If there's any items that we want to consider separately, or I had a couple items. Just I don't necessarily need to pull them, but for the item 9C, Maybe I would pull item 9C. And then on 9H and I, I note that the Times Press Recorder is ceasing publication this weekend, and our stipulation to the applicants is that they post a notice in the TPR, which will no longer be possible to do. So have we considered those?
We'll have to look at posting elsewhere.
I think the question is, do we then have to change? Do we have to take any action to deal with that?
Yeah, that's the basic question, is are we then not prepared to address this, or do we have other provisions so that, because the TPR is ceasing?
No, we can go ahead and take care of that tonight. If it's in a specific condition, then we can modify the condition to say, or an alternative publication prescribed by the staff, the Community Development Department. If that publication is no longer going to exist, then we obviously will just have them do it in a different publication. I'm not sure what that would be, but I'm sure we can come up with something, whatever's the best alternative to reach as many people as we can.
Okay, and then I would also like to separately consider item 9I, because I have some questions about that.
So you only have one item to pull?
That would be 9C and 9I.
I guess that doesn't quite... Do we need to pull 9H in order to change the language, or can we... I'm sorry. Do we have to pull 9...
Why don't we go ahead and pull both 9. Those, and meanwhile, I'm looking to try and find it, and then we can address it when we get to them.
Okay. So I'll move for approval all items that were not pulled.
We have to do better than that.
So are we, so for...
Consent, I'll move approval of consent items 9A through 9J, with the exception of 9H, I, and C.
Second.
Okay. Are there public comments on the consent agenda items? We can take any of the consent agenda items.
Good evening, Beatrice Spencer again. I just have some questions with regards to the warrants, which was an item not pulled. There are $29,000 in payments in four warrants marked for the Briscoe Interchange Project. And I have a question with respect specifically to the large one to Wood Rogers for $26,643.25. Is that because obviously there's work still ongoing, even though the Briscoe on and off ramps are closed, but is that work for the project report that was supposed to be due back in December, or exactly what are we paying for? And then also I had a question with respect to it's at the bottom of page 7, nearly at the second item from the bottom. An invoice for payment for $270 for the AG Village Improvement Association for April 2016 watering. Is that to pay someone to water, or is that for water? And then my other question is on page 3, which is the first page of the warrants. There's a Bank of America payment for professional services city manager goal setting. And I'm wondering, is that the goal setting that's going to be coming up on these closed or special meetings, or is this something different? Thank you.
Thank you. I'll ask the staff to respond at the end of the comment period. Is there any other comments on the consent items?
9I. I sent you guys all an email about this. I think Bob Lund has done a fabulous job doing the Village Improvement Association. However, this new beer festival, basically, I think it will be popular. And I think it's going to outgrow the location in the village very quickly. I would like to see something to start promoting other parts of our town. I've talked to Ms. Harmon specifically about some of my ideas, and I've offered my time to do it, such as storefronts through Christmas down Grand Avenue, lighting up their storefronts and stuff with lights. But I think that the beer festival, if we could bring it over to Rancho Park or something like that, that gives more room for this to expand. We're impacting the residents by asking to close public parking for taxis and stuff like that. I'd like to see them maybe use, if it stays here, use parking lots. Have a shuttle running back and forth. But the other concern I have is the farmers market. We've got farmers markets on Saturday, and then we hope to get this festival going Saturday afternoon. It's a small area. It's going to be very congested, I think, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other comment on the consent items?
Good evening. My name is April McLaughlin. I'm an Arroyo Grande resident. I wanted to speak on the warrants. I don't want to speak on the items that were pulled because I want to have more discussion about those at that time. But on the warrants, going through them and just doing a quick little search on a lot of the businesses that we're using, I see not very many local ones. So when we do blade sharpening, we're not using our local AG business. When we have landscaping work done, we're using a Los Osos company. And I can't imagine that Arroyo Grande doesn't have a landscaping company somewhere. So are we saving money by driving out of the area, giving our sales tax away to other areas? So does the city of Arroyo Grande actually promote Arroyo Grande businesses? I would like that try to change more in the future to do that. Right now, we don't have a grocery store. We're not making money that way. We're using businesses elsewhere. We're not getting the sales tax from that. So I would like that the city would take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other comment on the consent items? Okay, hearing none, we'll come back to council. Is there any further discussion? It's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent items absent 9C, H, and I. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Hill?
Yes. Item passes unanimously. For item 9C, we're requesting a revision of the definition of work week. And has there been consideration of maintaining city services 5 days a week that all the agencies would be able to respond during the traditional business week, if you will?
Yes. What's being proposed here is a modification of our personnel rules in terms of definition of the work week so that we would have flexibility to provide alternative work schedules. And if we decide to implement alternative work schedules, we would still provide services during the same hours that we currently do for the public. There's a possibility we might have extended hours for the public, but at this point I can say that we would have services during the same hours that we currently provide services.
Thank you for that. Is there any other questions on the item? Okay. 9H and I believe, required notice to be given in the TPR.
Your Honor, on 9H, if you'd be interested in adopting that resolution, we would recommend a modification to condition number 18 to reflect the Tribune would then be the applicable publication. And actually on 9I, there is no publication requirement because there's no street closures. So we only need to make the modification to the resolution that's part of 9H.
Okay, and then 9I, we have a waiver of the application fee. Is that, that's to recover the city staff's time to process the application and so forth. Is that, apparently that's normal. We have the application waiver on the item above. So are these like charitable, or can you explain that, please?
Certainly, it is somewhat routine on many of the temporary use permits that promote an activity whereby some of the profits go to a nonprofit cause. I believe that is the intent of the request for this particular application for the new festival, Beer and Food Festival, in October. And as to the, it's my understanding that the intent is to fund a nonprofit, being the Roy Grandy Public Art, for a certain percentage. I believe I heard 25%. But if you'd want more detailed information, I think I should look to see if Bob Blund is here, and I see a hand raising. So if you want specifics on the intent of those funds in terms of the going to a nonprofit and meeting the criteria for a fee waiver, Bob is here.
My other question is, has the police department looked at this application? Because it seemed that there would be concern about people being unable to drive and that sort of thing. And I was just concerned with the preparations and the notification for the police department.
Yes, Your Honor, the police department has weighed in on the event. We're involved in the staff advisory council, and we have representation of commander that sits on that during the process. So they have been involved. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Okay. Can we answer the questions that were possibly a little late, but can we answer the questions about the warrants that were asked earlier, the one for Briscoe?
I don't have that precise information in front of me, but the Briscoe project, the closure information, as well as the funding for the PA&ED phase of the project are both payments are both being made according to the budgeted amounts approved by council in recent months. That the closure reports as directed by this council to continue the closure beyond the July deadline, which we are continuing to pursue. And Caltrans has requested data for that, and it is in their hands now. And similarly, the budgeted amounts for the last contract amendment for the PA&ED phase is being completed, and that's also been submitted to Caltrans.
Just for the public, can you go over what the acronym is that you've been using, the PA&ED? Just so people
Sorry,
know.
Part Project Approval and Environmental Determination Phase.
Thanks.
Okay, and the second question was, do we promote using city businesses for city business?
We do have a local preference ordinance here in the city, and I don't know the details of it, but we certainly have one. And then the other two items that came up as questions on the warrants, we'll have to look into and get back to you.
Thank you. Is there any additional comment on items 9C, H, and I?
Aaron Hinkle again. Excuse me. With the alternative work schedules, as somebody that did do them for a number of years, they're great for the employees. It actually makes it a better workplace for your employees because they get these little 3 and 40 weekends all year long, which is very nice, but I would request that all managers stay at a 5:40 type schedule. because they're the ones that, as a citizen, I'm going to be calling them most of the time if I have an issue, and they're responsible for the staff when they're here and not here for whatever's going on. So I think for the employees, it'll make them a much happier group, but I think our managers need to stay on the 540s. Thank you.
Thank you for the comment. Is there any other comment on items 9, C, H, and I?
Good evening again. I wanted to speak on, I believe it's H and I, the two events that are coming up. You were not given in your packet the application for the beer festival, and if you had been, you would see that it's not complete. A lot of information is missing. It wasn't even accepted as complete by the city itself. At no point in Mr. Lund's missive did he ask for a fee waiver. It was just automatically given. And for you to understand, a nonprofit, a 501c3, which is a charitable contribution nonprofit where you can write that off on your tax return, the BIA is not that. They're a 501c6. They are a like-minded group with one interest, which is the improvement of the village. So when you learn that, maybe that will help make a decision. And nowhere in here, anywhere, does it say anything about the art panel, park, whatever, anything. So either that's an assumption or it was made in confidentiality. I don't know. I would like that to be addressed. On the item, the event where that's going to be doing, blocking up the street in the city of Arroyo Grande, you're blocking up the streets, and the letter from the entity that wants to do that states that they feel that that probably would be a detriment to the businesses on Grand Avenue. But we're okay with that. But we're going to deeply impact the village of Arroyo Grande for the betterment of Bob Lund's association, and I don't understand that. Only village businesses, according to this, are going to be invited first, or only at all, to participate in the village event, but we're going to shut the streets down in front of the rest of Arroyo Grande businesses. It just seems not fair, not even-handed, that the city manager spent so much time talking about all the great things that are happening in the village for economic development and the new businesses, but there was very little talked about the city of Arroyo Grande, the new shopping center. Yes, that was discussed, but overall, it's the village is doing this, and the village is doing that, and the village. We're a city of Arroyo Grande. I really wish that you guys would ask that the city staff care more about the city of Arroyo Grande and help the city of Arroyo Grande than just the village. So to end, I want to say that I think our city manager would make a great employee of the Village Improvement Association. As an employee of the city of Arroyo Grande, I don't feel that it's fair. Thank you.
Any other comment on items 9, C, H, or I? Okay, hearing none. Do we want to take those separately? 9C, I would move approval of item 9C.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. May we have a roll call, please?
Mayor Hill?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
9H. Sir.
Yeah, move approval of 9H with the amendment. I should ask this earlier. So could we change the language in the future so we don't have to, I certainly didn't pick this up. I appreciate that the mayor did something like or as approved by staff or something. Rather, I realize we're nailing it down to the Tribune. They might be gone the week after next.
Right. Well, for tonight, I recommend we put Tribune in there. But in the future, we can just say a publication recommended by staff or designated by staff.
Okay, I appreciate it. So I'll move with the amendment as stated by staff.
And that's condition number 18.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve item 9H with the amendment stated. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Yes.
Mayor Hill?
Yes. Finally, item 9I.
I'll move approval of item 9I.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve item 9I. May we have a roll call on that, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnett?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Yes.
Mayor Hill?
No. 9I passes by a vote of 4-1. Brings us to item number 10, public hearings. There are none tonight. And item 11 is old business. I'll ask the clerk to please introduce the item.
Old business 11A is consideration of a resolution establishing a policy regarding council communications. Mayor Hill and City Council, at your last council meeting on May 10th, the council directed staff to prepare a policy on council communications for council discussion. And the City Council has recently amended policy number 2 in the City Council Operations Manual entitled Policy Procedure for Conducting City Council Business in regards to special meetings, setting the agenda, and determining the scope of agenda topics. It's very common for cities to have a policy regarding council communications, and the city's current City Operations Manual does not have such a policy. As part of the proposed policy, it's recommended that the council include a legislative platform policy in order to facilitate the council's ability to take a position on legislative matters. I believe that we've discussed this on occasion with the council. It's come up once or twice. From time to time, the city is asked by the League of California Cities and other city-affiliated organizations to take a support and or oppose position on a particular piece of legislation or proposal, and when such a request is received, it's necessary to place the item on a future council agenda for approval prior to a response being sent. Often these requests are time sensitive, and due to our current process, we're not able to respond in a timely manner. The proposed legislative platform would allow the mayor or his or her designee on behalf of the city to sign and submit the requested communication as long as the position is consistent with positions taken by the League and or other city-affiliated organizations and previous positions taken by the city. A copy of that communication would be provided to the full council and presented as an information item under city manager report at the next regularly scheduled city council meeting. In terms of the council communications policy, I have one change that I would propose, and looking at the last paragraph on the first page of that policy, the sentence says, all council member correspondence using city resources shall be copied to the full council, the city manager, the city attorney, and the city clerk. And I would suggest that we replace city resources with city letterhead. And the reason for that is that a council member brought up a question today asking if they were to use a city-issued iPad to send an email, would that email need to be copied to the full council? And, of course, that wouldn't make sense. So what we're really talking about here is correspondence that goes out on city letterhead and providing copies of that to the full council. So alternatives for the council would include adopting the proposed resolution establishing this policy in the council operations manual, or modifying the proposed policy, or provide other direction. And that concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for the city manager. Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. Heather, there was a question raised about if we write a letter and we CC the whole council, that that's a violation of the Brown Act, which I didn't think it was, but I wanted you to clarify that for the public.
Sure, I'd be happy to. No, that doesn't constitute a violation of the Brown Act. The concern under the Brown Act is that deliberations, meetings, anytime the council wants to discuss city business, that it must be discussed in public. And the fear is that you could have a serial meeting or a meeting that occurs by virtue of electronic communications where you're actually communicating electronically, not at a public meeting in front of the public. So that's the concern with electronic communications. But by providing correspondence to the whole council for their information does not by itself violate the Brown Act, and is something that staff does all the time when they provide you with information on various items. The potential violation occurs if you hit reply all to that email and you say, oh, yes, this is a great idea, I support this, let's move forward on it, and then another council person says, oh, me too, or no, I don't like that idea, I think we should do some other approach, because now if you're replying all, then three council members, which is a majority, which is a quorum, is now deliberating or communicating on a matter outside of the public venue. So to answer your question, providing information to all does not violate the Brown Act. Members just need to be careful not to respond or begin a conversation about it outside of the public meeting.
Okay, thank you for that. That's my only question.
Mayor Pro Tem.
I have no questions. Thank you.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you. First of all, Diane, I appreciate that change that you made or you suggested, because that was a concern for me, so I appreciate that. I just have a clarification with Heather. I appreciate your discussion, but I kind of want to amplify it. And we were basically told, even though it was not determined to be a Brown Act violation, that quite often we should not respond to emails that we got at certain situations. In other words, to everyone. We could respond directly to you, but not to everyone. And it was out of abundance of caution to make sure we didn't lapse into a Brown Act violation, right?
Well, you might be talking about my disclaimer or my warning that I put on all my emails when I correspond with the five of you, which is generally, this is being provided for informational purposes. I'm not looking for a response back with your thoughts or comments. If you have a particular question about the information, to contact me only, or maybe the city manager only. And I do put that on there so that you don't hit reply all with your comments on whatever I'm providing, and then another, so that the rest of the council sees it. That's now, you know, you've chimed in, and then someone else might chime in with their comments. So again, it's to prevent the serial meeting.
Yep.
But I think everybody's aware of that. And I think
I guess what I'm getting at is it's been common practice, standard practice, that we not put everybody in the CC.
Yes, and I think with the clarification that the city manager has made, when you are using your laptop or your own device, when you're emailing a constituent, you don't need to CC the full council. With the modification that's been proposed, you would only be CCing the full council when you're using a city resource, city letterhead, and you're writing on behalf of the council or in your official capacity as a city council member. So in those instances, those correspondence, those letters, would be CC'd to the entire council so that the entire council is aware of this position or this information that's being generated. You would not have to do it on an email one-on-one to a constituent.
Great. I appreciate the clarity for that, because I don't think people understand that that's been an issue for all of us, that we have been basically told we shouldn't be CC'ing everyone. So it's not as though some of the things that people are complaining about was done out of the blue. It was done based on a policy, maybe an unwritten policy, but a policy nonetheless, that we should not be contacting other members. And would I appreciate being able to contact among all the members? Yeah, in certain circumstances, absolutely. But we were all, in my view, or at least I have been, following policy that we shouldn't do that. So I just wanted to amplify that one issue, and I appreciate the clarity. Thank you.
I guess my concern with it would be, say, an organization such as the League of Cities advocates a position on some issue that would come before the city, and if we copy all members of the council, could that not be taken as attempting to influence more than one member of the council outside of an open meeting?
I think if you're just providing, you know, here's this letter or this memo from the league that's interesting and you forward it, I don't see that as a Brown Act violation. Again, I believe the Brown Act violation would occur when people respond to that with their thoughts, their
opinion.
Position, their opinion on it. Frequently, the council's provided information on topics from the staff all the time. So the fact that you all get information on something does not create a Brown Act violation.
I think this one is asking for more than just forwarding information. It's actually asking to provide a city position on issues and then copy that to all the council members.
Are you referring to the policy here, the draft language in the policy?
Right.
Okay. So in the policy, it says when a request is received, the mayor or his designee on behalf of the city may sign and submit the requested communication so long as the position is consistent with the position taken by the league and or other city-affiliated organizations and previous positions taken by the city. A copy of that communication is then provided to the council and presented as an informational item at the next regularly scheduled meeting. So the way I understand that is that the information would be disseminated, and if it was clearly in line with the position the city had already been taken, then the mayor could go ahead and send that letter, and that's usually because there's not always time to schedule a meeting to have the city council vote to go ahead and support something the league is asking the city to support. So if it's already consistent with the policy you've taken, that would allow that to happen in this shortened way. The item would then come up at an agendized meeting as an informational item. At that point, people could chime in on it, but you're right, the letter would have already gone out.
And I guess that's my concern, and the crux of the matter is, again, hypothetically the league, but it could be any other organization, similarly requesting the city take a position on something, so that the idea that the position hasn't been taken, but they're recommending that, and obviously the league generally makes recommendations that are in the interest of the cities, but there's probably room for disagreement on any one given topic. So again, could that be seen as a violation of the Brown Act in terms of endeavoring to influence policy on whatever the topic might be?
I think if it wasn't clear what the city's position was, then this would not kick in, and the city manager would get it on an agenda for the council's consideration if there was time. If it was something really urgent, perhaps a special meeting. But this only happens when it's a clear position, but it looks like the city manager has a comment.
Yeah, maybe I can clarify this. Basically, we're asking for permission to send letters on behalf of the city council support or opposition of a position that the league is asking us to take. So the city belongs to the League of California or cities, and presumably we support what the league does. So when the league calls up and asks for a letter, for example, there's a housing bill going through the state legislature today, which we would probably want to write a letter of opposition as the league has asked us to, because it's a piece of legislation that takes more local control away from cities. And so we're asking for permission to be able to write that letter on behalf of the city in response to the league's request as they come in. However, if the council is not comfortable with the positions that the league takes, then you wouldn't want to include this as a policy. You would want to say, city manager, if the league makes a request and we've got time to put it on the agenda, put it on the agenda for council consideration, and if it's a time-sensitive item, we won't be able to respond, which is kind of what we're doing now. We're not responding to the league's requests that are time-sensitive. But if something comes up that we have time to put it on the agenda and it appears substantial, we do. So it's really your choice, and it's really a question of how comfortable do you feel with the position that the league takes on various topics. And in terms of Brown Act violation, it's certainly not a Brown Act violation. The Brown Act violations have more to do with trying to, the Brown Act is more about preventing dialogue between council members on various topics that may come before you. In this case, if you were to write a letter supporting the league, it may be on a topic that never comes before you because it's something that the state legislature is doing.
But just to clarify, I think a monologue would violate the Brown Act if I endeavored to influence Mayor Pro Tem Harmon to some policy, and then I'll further endeavor to contact Councilmember Barnidge on the same policy.
Only if it's an item that will come before the council. Or any city business, right?
Yes, Your Honor. If you had those individual conversations, that would create a serial meeting, and that would violate the Brown Act.
Okay. And I guess that's kind of the crux.
And again, this would be for items that the city had clearly taken a position on to go ahead and allow those letters. If the city hadn't taken a position, I think we would definitely need it to come before you. And if you're uncomfortable with it, we don't have to adopt this. This is just a potential policy for review to try and expedite responses to the League of Cities or other city affiliate organizations. But this can be tweaked. This cannot be adopted. It's up to your body.
I might respectfully disagree with our city attorney on this topic, that it's not just related to items that the council has clearly taken a position on. So, for example, the housing bill that's working its way through the legislature, the council has not taken a position. It will not come before you for consideration. However, if you had a policy like this, the mayor could write a letter in opposition to that bill as requested by the league.
Thank you for that clarification. And I also just a question. I note this is old business, and I don't recall discussing any resolution previously. But I guess that's a rhetorical question. Is there public comment on this item?
That was also my concern because I'm looking at the minutes from the May 10th Council Communications. Councilmember Barnidge requested to agendize an item to discuss implementing a council policy on letters written by city council members. And then when you get to the memorandum, it is recommended the city staff. So I got a little confused also. Thank you.
Is there any other comment on this item?
I went through the resolution several times, read through it, tried to see how many snafus I could come up with, and I didn't have a whole lot of luck. I really do support what's come before you this evening. I believe the resolution presented this evening is a good step in providing the checks and balances needed for good city governance. It helps to resolve situations where a council member or the mayor may have an opinion that is not the city stance. It allows the council members' First Amendment rights as private citizens while also requiring disclosure when a council member has an opinion that is not supported by the council as a whole. And most importantly, it keeps everyone on the council informed as to the official actions of the other members. After all, the city council must act as a body, a team working for the citizens of Arroyo Grande. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other comment on this item?
Good evening. My name is Colleen Martin. I live at 855 Olive Street in Arroyo Grande. And since the previous speaker spoke about a team, that brought me up here. We've had a couple meetings now in the last couple years that have had to do with meeting protocols, how the city council has their relationships, whether it's with the staff or with the way they run their meetings. And I have spoken more than once to your city manager about your need to have a special meeting all by yourself, a retreat. You could have a special meeting. You can call it on a Saturday. You can have it up your nice new hotel. We won't come. We'll let you do your business. This is how corporations do it. They have retreats. It's really helpful. You have to do it as a special meeting, and it would be an open meeting. But if the citizens were kind and wanted to help you, they wouldn't show up, and they would let you do your business in public with no audience. I highly recommend that you have a special meeting / council retreat. They're very helpful. Most companies that work as a team do that, and I think it would be very, very helpful. And as far as the resolution in front of you, it sounded like a lot of work, and no one already answers the phone at City Hall, so having a lot more communication going all over the place just seemed unnecessary to me, but go for it.
Thank you very much. Is there any other comment on the item?
John Keene, 298 North Elm Street. Just want to comment on the league's sending letters and us just blatantly saying we agree with you. There's been many times that I can quote that we don't agree with everything the league does. The league, they may be supposed to represent us, but they don't particularly represent everything that they put at, that we need to do. And anything, any correspondence that they send and say, send us a letter agreeing with you, the council needs to make that decision, not just blatantly send it back a letter that they request. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other comment on the item?
I concur with Mr. Keene. I noticed this verbiage was directly lifted from the California League of Cities website in part of this, especially the analysis of issues, page 2. And also the verbiage for communications at request of the League of California Cities, which seems to be the item people are sort of taking issue with at the moment, is lifted from the City of Lodi Council communication dated May 18th, 2011. And I noticed that it was put on the League website in 2013. This is now 2016. And I'm just kind of curious, City Manager Thompson clarified that we're not currently responding, but it makes me wonder why we need something now if we haven't taken advantage of it since it's been posted for 5 years. So that's one issue. And then just to clarify, I too am confused how we go from an item requesting something to be agendized to a 7-page resolution which states at the top that at the City Council meeting of May 10th, 2016, the City Council directed staff to prepare a policy. And according to the minutes which you accepted tonight, it states that Council Member Barnidge requested to agendize an item to discuss implementing a council policy. To me, there's a great leap between those two items, and your minutes have now been accepted. So that's still a question in my mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments on the item?
Good evening. It seems that whatever happened on May 10th morphed into something a little bit bigger and now includes the League of Cities. One of the clarifications that I would like is changing the wording to say city letterhead instead of city resource. I would consider an email from an elected official an official document. So would that be included in this resource or letterhead or whatever you want to call it? If that's the case, well, then you all start using your private emails, as most of you do anyway. So now we're losing some transparency with that. That concerns me greatly. They're already overstaffed or overworked and understaffed from what I'm hearing, that they need to help us less. So how much time is going to be wasted reading 5 emails every day, all day long, from all of you to who writes you and who writes you back and who you write to? That just seems such a waste of time to include an attorney, a city manager, their time should be spent much more effectively. In the end, what I want to say is this seems unenforceable anyway. I mean, I get the city league thing. I understand that part. But the rest of it is unenforceable. Are you going to fire the mayor? Are you going to fire Kristen Barnidge? I mean, what are you going to do? It has no teeth. Why are we wasting our time on this? I can see, again, the legal side of things. But there's no policy on a grocery store. There's no policy. He didn't break a rule, even a rule you're trying to make. So we're wasting our time. In the end, the mayor was elected to lead our city. You run for mayor, and you run for mayor, and you run for mayor if you don't like the way he's working. He was elected to be our mayor. Man up or woman up and run yourself if you don't like it. Thank you.
Is there any other comment on the item?
Good evening. I have to agree. Oh, Aaron Hinkle, Roy Grandy. I have to agree with Mr. Keene. I don't think we should blindly follow anybody with a stance. Because some organization takes a stance on something, to follow them wouldn't be right. I mean, look through history of people that have followed people because of whatever. There's been a lot of problems. If it's that important, it should be discussed here openly and let everybody take a stance on it, let you have public input on it. But just to follow the League of Cities, no. What if we all disagree with it? As a city, most of your constituents disagree with something against whatever they're saying, then you're going to go with what they say against whatever your community says. So we can't go down this avenue. If it isn't broke, don't try to fix it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other comment on the item?
Karen Ray, resident of the city of Aurora Grande. A few things. First of all, with regard to how this got on the agenda, the question isn't how this got on the agenda. The question is whether it was properly noticed. And as long as it was properly noticed, it can be on this agenda. Secondly, with regard to the League of Cities, I am in agreement with the people who have spoken here, and as a former representative of this city at the League of Cities, I can tell you that I have sat in large meetings in Los Angeles and argued for small cities against large cities, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what we did at the county when I served there with regard to the CSAC, the county's equivalent of the League of Cities, is we had a meeting once a year to approve the legislative agenda, and we went through that to decide what we agreed with and what we didn't. So we shouldn't be enacting a policy that allows us to blindly, as residents have said it, follow the League of Cities, but rather we should weigh in once a year on that legislative agenda, and those things that we do agree with, we should be able to authorize the mayor or his designee to write that letter. Lastly, I'm concerned about the use of the word letterhead in this policy, because the real issue isn't the use of letterhead. The real issue is the use of title. And if you are going to use your title, then you are giving the impression that you are speaking for the city. And so if it is not with the consent of the majority of the council, then that must be disclosed. That's normal policy. It's policy in many other cities. It should be boilerplate in our policy. And if it's a dissenting opinion, that is an important opinion. The Supreme Court does it. We're allowed to do it. And you have the First Amendment right to write on behalf and using your title. But you must say whether it's a majority or dissenting opinion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to comment on the item?
Leanne Akins, resident of Arroyo Grande. I actually do take issue with how this ended up on the agenda. I think aside from the fact that the minutes that were accepted from the consent agenda, staff was actually not directed to draft a resolution. There was no direction from this council given to staff. And I think what I take issue with is the council should be the one who's providing direction, not staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other comment on the item? Okay, hearing none at this time for council discussion. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I guess first, I'd like to deal with the confusion, if you will, over the why this is an old agenda item. This actually came up quite some time ago, well, 6 months ago anyway, after the League of Cities meeting when we had a letter that was written in support of a league position and reported to us after the fact. At that time, I asked that we would deal with this as a, that we would come up with a policy so we would be comfortable with what with that kind of an action. So that's why it's called old business, not that it really matters, but that's where the old business comes from, the league part of this, not from the direction we gave. In addition, I did ask the city manager to provide us with some examples of how we could get there. It did maybe morph into a policy, but I did request that the city manager give us some direction on how we could do this, in particular maybe like the way that other cities do it. So that's the direction, if you will, that at least I'm aware of. So that said, I guess I'll deal with it because we seem to be kind of earlier we focused on the on half of this item, and now we're focused on the League of Cities part of it. I guess I'll jump to that. I think two things. One is we're requested often by the League of Cities to personally, using our title, send a letter in response. I frankly have never done that, not because I don't agree with them, but because it seems like by the time I've got something written, the item is already done. And in that case, yeah, I do think that we would need to copy our other council members because they may want to take a different position, even on a state issue. So I do think that if we are even emailing on that, then in fact we should be copying our fellow council members. On the other hand, I do share the concern about that there are many items, you know, especially ones related to taxation that we don't agree with the League of Cities on, and I think it's an area that we probably need to be very careful with. I don't remember this coming up in the past 12 years that I've been on council to where we had an item that went forward to the League of Cities that was not in fact approved in advance by council. I'm sure that there are many members who wrote those emails, but I don't know of an official position taken by the city with the league. So I'm inclined to say that we would scratch this. There's an uncomfortable level with it. So even though I would say 90% of the time that this would work, it's not worth it for the other 10 that we would have disagreement over. I would just add this, although I doubt it's going to go in this direction, that the purpose of copying the other council members is specifically so you, if the city was taking a position you disagreed with, you would have the opportunity to respond. That's the whole point of being informed. Yeah, it can get really busy, but so then kind of returning to the more controversial part of this, which is council members writing letters to other government agencies with a position. The example was used about the Sand District and the Regional Water Quality Control Board. When the mayor or any of us serve on a board that we've been appointed to, and especially the Sand District for some special reasons, our responsibility actually would not be to report back to the council. It's actually to report to our other commission members. So if there was a letter sent to the Regional Water Control Board, it isn't the council of Arroyo Grande who would need to be copied. It would actually be the other members of the Sand District Board because it's a Sand District issue. Similar with when I serve on SLOCOG. The mayor did come, and I appreciate it, came and spoke in favor of our funding. But that was a public meeting. That wasn't a letter sent. And if there was a letter sent, then I would hope that we would be copied on. Because what if it was the other way around? What if, in fact, one of us sent a letter to SLOCOG opposing the funding? Or, I think more importantly, sent a letter to the California Transportation Commission opposing the funding, and none of us knew about it to respond. That's why it's important that council, that other council members, other elected officials, we're all elected, not just the mayor, we're all elected, and we all need to have the opportunity to respond. And so that's really all this proposed here tonight. There's no restriction on anybody's First Amendment rights. You can take a position. You can take a position in opposition to what the council, as long as you identify it as such. A good example of this was on the Phillips 66 issue. Pismo Beach chose to take no position, And two of the council members felt that they should. And they wrote their own, the mayor and a council member wrote their own letter, but they identified that it was, even though it was under their title, they identified that it was their position and not that of the city. So there's plenty of opportunity to exercise our First Amendment rights and still still disclose to the other council members what action we've taken or what information we provide, however you want to put it, because not action, but what information we provided so that they have the opportunity to respond. In this particular case with the FTC, we may or may not have agreed with the position taken here, but we did not have the opportunity to respond until actually the FTC had already responded. And I think that's what generates this. Now, granted, you can say this as much ado about nothing, but it's like a lot of things. It's not a problem until it is. And that's why we have to have a policy. Granted, can drift away from these policies, it happens, get your hand slapped, but we have to at least have the policy in place so we can keep everybody informed. This really is a transparency issue. It's not just us. This allows the public as well. As I say, flip this around and make it not about Albertsons and Spencer's, but about Walmart or about some other controversial business being promoted by a council member without any direction from the rest of council. And I think everybody would want to know that took place. So the other part of this, the League of City part, I'm in favor of scratching that. It's just not worth it. But the other part of it, I for one do want to know when anybody is sending out and requesting action by another or providing information to another government agency. I'm going to provide one little tiny caveat, and we'll just sort of have to work through this. And that is when we're already appointed to a board, there's lots of activity that takes place there that is not really about. We are already appointed to the board, and therefore I don't think that we're talking about the boards that we're sitting on, whether it's SLOCOG for me or APCD or the Five Cities Association. As an appointee, you're communicating directly with the staff there quite a bit, and every single one of those wouldn't necessarily need to be copied. Thank you.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. Okay, so I want to start out by saying what I'm about to say is my humble opinion and my humble opinion only. The League of Cities language, I think, needs to go. I'll just leave it at that. The issue about wearing dual hats when you're on a different commission and different board, we've actually talked about this ad nauseum, and there's a policy about it. So I would suggest that maybe as a refresher, that come back to council so everybody can review it. But we talked about this ad nauseum over the years, and it's been dealt with. So I'll leave that at that. I am a firm believer that we can quite often CC everybody. But if we are being honest with each other, it has been an unwritten policy by this council and by staff previously that we should not do that. So whatever your view on this issue is, take it in the context in what has been happening. It has not been council policy to CC everybody. We have been specifically told by legal staff, Heather and Tim Carmel before that we should not CC people because there is that possibility that you could lapse into a Brown Act violation. Not that it would be a Brown Act violation to begin with, but you could lapse into that. And so as a way of safeguarding against that, we were told not to CC other people. So that's what I'll say on that. As far as the letter that was written by the mayor, I wish I'd done it myself, okay? We're all council members here. We don't have any other more authority than the next person. He doesn't have any more authority than me. I don't have any more authority than him. We should be advocating on behalf of the city of Arroyo Grande. This is not an issue about Spencer's. This never was. And people that say it was don't get it. They didn't read the letter and they don't get it. This is advocating on behalf of the city of Arroyo Grande. Okay? asking questions and pursuing that, there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing. And I'm embarrassed I didn't think of it myself. And knowing how much Ms. Harmon promotes business and some of the things she's done for this city, I'm shocked she didn't do it herself. That being said, I'm okay with the idea of CCing people what I'm doing. I have no fear of telling people what I'm doing. I'm totally above board. You can like it, not like it. I'm going to keep doing what I do, for better or worse. I'm going to continue to use a city laptop, which has my name as a council member on the bottom. I am not going to write every single time, this is my opinion only, or this is an opinion of the council. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to continue to do what I do. If I have a request to make, I'm going to make the request. If I have information I need to ask for, I'm going to ask for it. Every time this city has ever written a letter with the mayor signing the bottom, it says, this is on behalf of the city council of Arroyo Grande. And it's specifically said in every letter. Okay? So understand the difference there. There is actual verbiage in every letter signed by the mayor when it is covered by the whole council. And when it's not, that language is not there. Words have meaning. And those words weren't in his letter. They were not in his letter. He was only representing himself. It was not on city letterhead. This is much ado about nothing in a political year. That's what this is. So that's my opinion. I think we've wasted a lot of time. I appreciate the people that have concerns about this, but it's been a complete waste of time, other than the idea that CCing is, you know, possibly a good idea, but people need to understand that has not been the policy up to this date. Thank you.
Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. As far as the resolution goes, I appreciate staff bringing that forward because we don't want to do this two or three meetings. We want to have the information. We're big girls and big boys. We don't have to accept the resolution. We don't have to go with staff's recommendation. In the past, we have gone and done something that staff did not recommend. So I appreciate it being there, and we can take it or leave it. You know, there's five of us up here that can decide. So in order for us to have a meeting where we don't have to come back again, I think it was necessary. As far as it being unenforceable, well, I don't think that's a reason to not put a good business practice in place and have a policy in place. And I think that it's nice to have that information in the policies and procedures manuals for the council so that we can sit here and try to abide by what's in there. Someone had brought up a team building retreat. A couple of us up here brought up a team building retreat, and the majority of the council didn't want to do it, so it didn't go anywhere. So that was not move forward. And as Councilmember Guthrie said, this has nothing to do with free speech. You can write a letter all you want, and as long as it is the perception of the person who's reading it that this is not written by the entire council or with the view of the entire council, when you start a letter out with, I'm writing as the mayor of Arroyo Grande, that tends to convey that you're writing on behalf of the whole city council. I think that Councilmember Guthrie brought up a good point that when we are CC'd on something that goes to a government agency, we could very well have a different opinion, and we wouldn't know that opinion was out there from one of us unless we knew we were CC'd in the with the letter. I'm willing to scratch the Lee initiatives. I do think if something comes through the Lee, because we do get the emails all the time, and there are some very important things that they do discuss, and sometimes they're more important than others. So if there is time, and we can bring it back, then I would appreciate that, not scratching it all together, but not until it comes back, we can all weigh in on it. And those are my only comments right now. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would be in agreement to strike the section that's indicated on page 7 I think it's entitled Legislative Communications at the Request of City-Affiliated Organizations, specifically Cal League of Cities. I think everybody was very astute in making their comments about the pros and cons of doing a blanket support or opposition to Cal League. Plus, I know that as members of the council, we all get, I don't know if it seems like it's daily, it might be weekly, that we get information from Cal League Cities on a routine basis. It also outlines hot button legislative actions, timelines on when they need to, you know, move forward. And so at any given time, you know, we're aware of those, so it would be an opportunity to bring it forward to full council. Quite frankly, I do have some oppositions related to some of the representation of Cal Leagues, mainly because we're a small city, and sometimes the larger cities, and rightfully so, based on population and their resources, seem to maybe get a little more preference than we do, but we just have to be louder in our voices. Let's see. So as to the council communications policy discussion that we're having right now was requested by council utilizing the guidelines that were revised on March 8th, which, by the way, now permits a minority vote of the council to put an item on an agenda. And then I guess overall moving forward with these guidelines, it promotes transparency, enhances communication, cohesiveness, actually provides a heads up of about what's going on, and certainly allows more effective communication between the public and their council members. Nowhere does it stifle anyone's ability to express their opinions, write a letter to a public agency, the Federal Trade Commission, or a member of the public. It provides guidelines, it's a best practice, and is used in other cities. I wholeheartedly have supported and will continue to support anyone's right and ability to express themselves. Some people made public comment about that we're supposed to work all as one and a team, and believe it or not, the council is a whole body. We are supposed to work as a team. Having the ability to question, inquire, or ask for an explanation for one of our other council members is paramount to the process and should be respected for what it is, an inquiry. It was as simple as that. And I'm ready to move forward with the exception of the legislative communications. Thank you.
Okay, this item obviously has, first of all, addressed the big issue in the room, which is this is a letter that I wrote to the FTC requesting that we hopefully would get a grocery store in one of our largest commercial buildings that remains vacant to this day. And I make no apology for that. I did note that that the bidder of record, which is the high bidder at a bankruptcy auction, was noted as Spencer's Markets. They have been one of my supporters, which I'm very proud of. And again, I make no apology for that. The issue of copying within the carefully defined requirements of the Brown Act is an issue that concerns me. The League of Cities thing that's part of this, I don't support that. I agree with Mr. Keene. The rest of the policy seems fairly innocuous, although I note that we have issues that we've asked to be addressed previously, parking with respect to new development, issues of that. It was suggested at the last meeting that we agendize talking about a grocery store. I think that's not a bad idea. We could get the entire council involved and perhaps give direction to the city on how we want to proceed encouraging businesses here in grocery stores, especially in this particular case, but all other business development as well. So this just seems to be a distraction to me, and that I think there's other issues of business that are of more import that I think are taking a sideline, such as the parking issues, medical marijuana, things like that, that we've specifically directed staff to address in a little more timely manner. So I don't really support this for that reason. With that, is there a motion to proceed?
So what I heard from council was that, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that you would support the council communication policy replacing city resources in the last paragraph with city letterhead, and that we would strike the legislative communications paragraph, and we would continue with our current practice of bringing requests from the League of California Cities to the council individually if they appear to be important, and the request from the league that require quick action will continue to disregard because we're not able to respond quickly enough.
Let me ask, are we going to be bringing this back with the change in language, or are we going to...
The council can make a motion to make the changes that I just described and vote on it this evening, if you'd like to do so.
I move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande establishing a policy regarding council communications, including the changes to the council communications policy as described by the city manager.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we proceed with the resolution with the changes enumerated by the city manager. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Yes.
Mayor Hill?
No. The item passes 3-2. Moving on to new business, we have none this evening. Item 13 is council reports. We'll have comment on the council reports. I did attend the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting. There's a number of things going on at the Sanitation District that I would recommend all members of the public watch the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District board meetings, which are televised on AGP or through Slow Span. And one is that the district is moving forward somewhat slowly, but forward at least with the redundancy project there, which is the last stage of the processing for wastewater, which the single device that does that has been in service for over 30 years and cannot be taken offline for repair without violating the discharge permit of the sanitation district. And that would result in approximately $3,000 a day fines that the water board is not allowed to mediate. So we're proceeding with that. The first stage in the process is going for a coastal development permit that is in process. We have authorized limited engineering scope with further steps to be approved by the board as we go forward. The budget for the organization is coming forward. We're approving a rate increase with the district that is not related to the city sewer rate increases. There's two components of your sewer bill. There's the collection portion of it, which refers to the city's collection sewer system. And then there is the sanitation district portion, which is the trunk lines operated by the sanitation district and the actual wastewater processing. So the redundancy project is estimated to cost somewhere between $12 million at the relatively low end, and with a number of contingencies and so forth, up to $19 million. My actual belief is that it somewhere between $12 and $14 million is probably a reasonable number. I want to congratulate the staff at the Sanitation District plant who have operated the plant very, very well, meeting all discharge requirements and keeping the plant, which is in an aging condition, but keeping it running very well and, again, meeting all discharge requirements. They've done that for a considerable period of time, being somewhat shorthanded. Billing for the sanitation district, residents of Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande will see no change to the billing process for the sanitation district facilities. They will continue to be billed on your monthly utility bill that you receive from the city. The Oceana Community Services District has not had a contract with the sanitation district. The billing for Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, in fact, the billing for all three member agencies, was done just by an understanding, I guess, a handshake agreement. There was no written contract or anything for the bill collection process. And so at the beginning of the last year, Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach entered into a contract with the sanitation district, an actual written contract for the first time, to collect those fees on behalf of the sanitation district. OCSD elected not to do that, and the billing there would be put as a result on the county tax rolls. So that is the basic status of the sanitation district. We did hire a general manager for the sanitation district. It's called a district administrator is the actual position title. Commonly, special districts have a general manager. So this would be essentially the general manager position, which is analogous to our city manager position. And that is a gentleman by the name of Gerhard Hubner, who comes to us from Ventura County and has considerable experience both on the regulatory side. He's worked for the Regional Water Quality Control Board and on the public sector side, having worked for water agencies and such in Ventura County and other locales. So we're glad to have him on board. So there's, again, a number of issues happening in the sanitation district. And Briscoe Halcyon Interchange Subcommittee, there was no meeting. Oversight Board of the Successor Agency was no meeting. CJPIA has had effectively no meeting. There were a couple of requests from entities to join the CJPIA, which is a consortium. That is the only business I'm aware of that's being addressed there, and no other meetings. Mayor Pro Tem Harmon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. For the Water Resources Advisory Committee, the main focus on the May 4th meeting was an update on the implementation of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, also known as SGMA, because, you know, we always need to name it something. The update highlighted key dates for implementation for groundwater sustainability agencies, also known as GSAs, for high and medium priority basins subject to critical conditions of overdraft, which must adopt groundwater sustainability plans and initiate implementation of these plans by January 30th, 2020. The groundwater sustainability agencies for all other high and medium priority basins must adopt and implement their plans by January 31st, 2022. These requirements do not pertain to adjudicated water basins. However, adjudicated basins are subject to other mandated reporting under this act. The Air Pollution Control District met on May 18th and heard public comment on the proposed budget for fiscal year 2016-17. A total budget of $4,506,091 was requested and represented a decrease, actually, of 3%. There were minor increases to a few expenditure categories, but most categories will decrease or remain at the same level. However, the second item was a proposal for a 3.75% increase in annual operating permit fees, adding an annual $100 tracking and reporting fee for permit exemptions, and increasing the hourly billing rate to $125 from the current $115 rate, to name a few. These fees are outlined in District Rule 302, and it's under the title of Schedule of Fees. If you go to the Air Pollution Control District website for that May 18th hearing, the agenda is posted there, and it gives you the complete list of the changes. The budget and proposed increase in fees will be adopted at the next meeting, which is June 22nd at 9 a.m. at the Board of Supervisors. I encourage anyone who would like to be heard on either of these items to contact myself or the Air Pollution Control District directly. The Five Cities Fire Authority met May 20th. The authority has commenced its weed abatement program, and properties have been identified and notices are in progress. The preliminary budget for fiscal year 2016-17 was presented. The preliminary expenditure total of $4,184,900 includes the addition of payments for the recently ordered fire engine, grant matching of 10% for self-contained breathing apparatus replacements, provided we get the grant, an increase in vehicle maintenance, and other minor adjustments. A full budget presentation is requested to be set for City Council on June 14th, and I'll handle that business under Council Communications. There were five battalion chief candidates assessed on May 6th, and a decision is still pending. The strategic planning process continues, and a work plan has been identified and broken into two segments. Those segments include organizational effectiveness, and the second is financial sustainability. The work group will reconvene in early June to assemble the supporting data elements and fiscal impacts identified in this work plan. A new EOS engine for Station 2 has been received from the state. And then proceeding to response summary. EMS is still trending for the majority of the calls. There were two structure fires in Oceano, and overall the numbers are still lower than last year. A decrease in responses has been realized with the March-April revisions to the automatic aid agreement. I think I reported out last month that there was decreases. I actually was able to get numbers. The changes are having a significant impact on overall call volume and are as follows. The 2015 total auto aid calls from January, and this is up to May 19th, was 177 with the revisions to the automatic aid agreement. So far, 2016 year-to-date auto aid calls were at 104. That's a variance of 73, which means there's a decrease of about 41%. So that was a really very wise and very pleased that the authority was able to move forward on that, because we're already seeing a big impact on that. I also wanted to mention that on May 20th, there was, as everyone probably knows, even though we're losing a newspaper, there was a fire at the Coal Canyon recycling facility. Fire response truck 5 was dispatched at 8:06 p.m. on May 20th with Ferguson, McMahon, and Densmore. Engine 2 was dispatched at 8:20 with Huey, Bennett, and Lee responding. These rigs were sent to support CAL FIRE's effort and returned to Aurora Grandy at 2 a.m. backfill at Station 1 was filled with the off-duty personnel returning, and that was Serby, Hinden, and Farnsworth. And I just wanted to tell them, well done, gentlemen. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Councilmember Guthrie.
I will start with SLOCOG, a thick agenda, but really a pretty short one. The first item was of course, the Self-Help County. We had a presentation on that at the last council meeting. They will probably, well, I would expect they're going to take final action on it at this next meeting. It was just a, sorry, I think I'm talking so loud. Okay. I will not be able to attend the next SLOCOG meeting, and the mayor will be attending in my place, where I believe we'll actually have final action from SLOCOG on the Self-Help County. The other issue, which actually might be a little bit more interesting, was had to do with setting ourselves up as a, let's see, what's it actually called here? I want to get it exactly right. A sustainable, well, I'll just describe it. At any rate, it has to do with establishing in our county, because we have very few serious pollution issues. We have no communities that are considered disadvantaged communities. They may have low income, they may have age, they may have these other issues, but because we don't have significant air pollution or significant water pollution, we don't qualify for a lot of grants. So SLOCOG went to a lot of trouble and a significant study to create a whole other set of criteria in order to demonstrate where we did have disadvantaged communities. And surprisingly, by changing this, it has a significant effect on areas like Grover Beach or Oceano. But even in Arroyo Grande, almost all of about two-thirds of Elm Street now qualifies as a disadvantaged community. And I did forward this to staff with the idea that we may be able to look at some of our bike programs and some of our other transportation that may now qualify for grants based on using this criteria. It's also possible, and it wasn't clear from staff, that this could apply to water as well, which would be a really key issue for us going forward, because we know that the disadvantaged communities really help us qualify for grants in water as well as transportation. So those were the two SLOCOG issues. South County Transit actually had quite a few things. We accomplished probably more in this one meeting than we have in 5 years, so there's quite a bit of stuff here. First, we did redo the old South County Transit RTA agreement for management. I think it was 12 years old. It mentions all kinds of entities that no longer exist, and we did move forward and replace that agreement, which is between the South County Transit and the RTA for management, spelled out much more clearly what the responsibilities are. We also have proposed a revised joint powers agreement, another very old agreement. Our staff stepped in on some of that. That will be coming back to this council, because ultimately, of course, it is the councils that approve it and then move forward to file that with the Secretary of State once it's approved by all the entities. And then one of the big deals, we finally arrived at a logo. There's probably the only thing harder than getting a logo is selecting a picture for advertising, which I'll talk about the T-bit in a minute, but we did. It took three tries, and it almost fell apart this time as well, but we did finally select the logo, and we'll be able to move forward now with quite a bit of our media. So the two really true biggest items are that the proposal, one for a major route change. We will be adding an additional service and changing the service. Those of you who are familiar with it, Route 23 is a bus route that frankly just wanders all around the five cities, mostly in Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, just a little tiny bit into Pismo Beach. That program is being revised into a slightly shorter one, but a second bus added to go the opposite direction. So you now, if you want to go from Oceano or from over by Elm Street Park and go over to the other side of the freeway to the Walmart Shopping Center, that you can do that much more easily. You have twice as many buses, but more importantly, if you happen to be on the short side on the way there, you're on the long side on the way back, which makes your return trip work a lot better. I believe they're going to come and do a presentation of this, but because I was going to put this up on the overhead, but I believe they'll be coming to make a presentation and a much more complete explanation of how it works then. Because now that I look at this, if I put this on the overhead, we'll be here all night while I describe it. The other item is that is a rate change. We are moving from $1.25 to $1.50. We had several meetings and with riders with this going forward. I think the other key change is also that we'll be eliminating transfers, and this means that if you had to take two buses, you would have to pay twice. You don't get an automatic transfer between buses. But we did replace that. We backfilled that with what's called a day pass. So for the price of one round trip, you can buy a day pass and ride all day long. So you're covered if you are somebody who has to ride two buses to get somewhere, that in fact it won't cost you any more than that. In addition, they've done similar things for the regional passes as well. So we also passed the budget at this hearing. I think the key thing here is that, you know, gas is down, our maintenance is down because of the new buses, insurance is up, and part of the study here by RTA was that they did an hour study and discovered how much time they're spending, and so the cost of management has gone up slightly, but we did test it against their other service for Paso Robles, and it's very similar in an hours of service basis. At any rate, the good news for us is there's no request for additional funding. The additional bus that's running is covered by a grant. If, in fact, that's continued in the future, if it's as successful as I think it is. I just have to add, this is something I've been asking us to do for 10 years, is to really look at connecting the two sides of the freeway instead of just wandering all around town with our bus. So at this point, there is no request for additional funding from the city. And that's it for South County Transit. And then moving on to the Business Improvement District. Of course, there's an extensive report in tonight's agenda. I think to kind of extend with going forward, I think that the two big items going forward is that they have contracted with a virtual reality company to film a virtual reality film here at for the Strawberry Festival as a promotion for Arroyo Grande, which will be use the Strawberry Festival as a focus to demonstrate a whole bunch of other things throughout the city and throughout the festival as well. So we'll be on the leading edge of this, which can be good, could be bad, but certainly I know that the hotel operators are very excited to be part of this. In addition, this is the photograph part of it. We finally arrived at agreement on a photograph for a bus wrap. The original intention was to try to get a billboard. It was too expensive, but the bus wrap has become a very common and popular mode, and it took a while, but we did finally arrive at a picture that we want to put on the side of a bus going forward. So that's also going to happen here in the near future as well. And that concludes my reports. Thank you.
One question: have we surveyed the riders of SCT to get a feedback for new routes and so forth?
Yeah, we actually did a couple of events, and historically these are not well attended. We had one, I think we got six people, which doesn't sound like very many, but these are often one or two people show up for these kinds of workshops, is what they call them. And we did get mixed requests, particularly on the route change, because there are a couple of stops that were eliminated. But mostly what we found is that once we pointed out that they were, while one stop might be eliminated, it's being replaced by one close by. With a few exceptions, most of the stops there's an alternative stop available. So we actually did two of these. We did one of them as the open workshop meeting, and then in my communications with one regular rider that I know quite well, he then put together another group of regular riders of five or six. That was actually a very productive meeting. Went beyond just the routes. But went into a lot of the other operational issues within the bus system and was quite productive. So there will still be a good number of people who are unaware of the changes when it happens. But I just think particularly for Arroyo Grande, this is a huge improvement for our city.
Thank you.
Can I ask one quick question on your report? The the set of criteria that SLOCOG is changing to help us help this county maybe fall into the disadvantaged neighborhoods. But is that already gone through to the state and they've approved it, or we're just the SLOCOG's just because I can't imagine that they'd say, oh yeah, that sounds good.
Apparently, it is that easy.
Oh wow.
Yeah, because that was my question. So you just choose to ignore pollution, water pollution, and air pollution and say these are the really important things, and apparently as long as you call it out in your regional transportation plan that you sort of publicly said this is what we're basing our disadvantaged communities on. Now, it is possible that when they go to do the grant reviews that somebody's going to make them aware of that, and that. But at this point, based on our needs, we've established they bent it, but they didn't break it.
Okay, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Brent?
Thank you. Integrated Waste Management met. It was a short meeting. There was an election of officers. There was a brief discussion of regulatory update regarding pharmacy medication drop-off. That's still in flux. There was a brief discussion of the budget review, and it was very cursory, but the budget's in good shape. They have over $1 million in reserves, and it looks good there. That was a short meeting. Economic Vitality Corporation was much more dynamic. Jeff Armstrong, president of Cal Poly, came and spoke about 400 units of public workforce housing that they want to do as a public-private partnership. So that was exciting. And then Mike Cannon, the president of Cannon and Associates, where we have our meetings, got up and described the growth of his company since the economy tanked and it's come back, and he's growing at a rapid pace. And he described a very interesting kind of culture of their business where they went and did, some of them did a lot of extreme sports. They did things together as a group. They did survival training. They did a lot of different things for team building that go beyond what you would normally think of as team building. And the guy was just so passionate. It was fun to listen to him talk about the growth of his company. And then Noreen Martin, the CEO of Martin Resorts, gave a presentation and a video presentation about the California Coastal Trail Project, which she did a huge part of and dealt with the Coastal Commission, which is like an act of God, and was able to get a section of trail done, and she basically described it as she wanted it to be part of her legacy, and she was very passionate. Really very much enjoyed it. Then the self-help initiative, which we already heard Ron DeCarli come here and give. He gave that whole presentation again. So that was the extent of the EVC meeting. Thank you.
Just a quick question. What's the status on the machine, I'll call it, for dealing with food waste? Is that still moving forward?
There's
6 months away, two
it's,
years
it's,
away?
It's away. It's, I'd have to look at my notes, but they're still the idea of organic. You're talking about the
mix the green waste with food waste and the.
Yeah, no, that's probably, I think, a year off. One other thing I did forget to mention is they have an economic dashboard now where you can get a lot of information regarding the county. If you go to the EVC website, you can click on it, and it gives you very specific information about the county. And it's also on the Tribune website. You can click on it and go to there as well. So either place, it's got a whole bunch of economic information that's specific to San Luis, so you might want to check that out. Thank you.
Question on the prescription drug disposals. It used to be that people could go to fire stations or police stations and turn in expired prescription drugs. Now that's supposed to happen only at pharmacies, but I understand there's some confusion or some pharmacies are
there's
not accepting
a,
that.
There's a friction because the pharmacists, a lot of them don't want to have the kiosks in their stores, but they're trying to work it out because a lot of them don't want to do the mail either. So there's still some back and forth on that.
That's a serious issue that impacts cross with the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District as well, because there is a tendency to want to, if we make it difficult to dispose of prescription drugs, people tend to put it down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a very adverse effect on the sanitation district plant, potentially, which is a biological treatment plant, and things like antibiotics and so forth tend to mess with that. So
there's a pharmacy group that's, I can't think of the name of it, but they basically lobby on behalf of the pharmacy groups, and they're really opposed to, you know, any sort of kiosk issue at this point. So
that's an issue that has a number of impacts, either going into the trash and ultimately, potential for reaching groundwater and that kind of thing, or the sanitation district plant and so forth.
Right.
And I think that even the federal agencies that regulate drugs and so forth are involved in some of that. So that may be something that I don't know if the city wants to look into something in that and to endorse Waste Management Authority actions, but that has potentially a lot of consequences.
Bill Worrell's been really active in trying to promote that type of system, but so far it's been a rough go.
Excuse me. It does the sanitation, I know that it's just our district for the sanitation district, but do they have kind of a, I don't know if lobby is the right word, am I getting off topic? Can the sanitation districts work together maybe statewide or regionally if this is probably an ongoing issue for those districts related to any changes in the farm drop-off and stuff, that maybe that would give a louder voice and maybe, instead of just having the pharmaceutical or the drugstores, pharmacies advocating, I don't know if that might be a way to go. End of comment.
That may work. Could do this. This is a biological treatment plant. Not all of them are, but there's also potential impacts to groundwater and if it's disposed of in landfills or dumped in the backyard or something like that. So,
in addition. Okay.
Yeah, just making it difficult for people to dispose of obsolete prescription drugs is probably not not a good thing. Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. The Zone 3 Water Advisory Board is meeting on Thursday, and the Homeless Services Oversight Council did meet on May 18th. The action item was to recommend allocation of the fiscal year 2015 and fiscal year 2016 Emergency Solutions Grant for $219,612, and this was a collaborative approach with a lot of different agencies that serve the homeless. It was with the it was awarded to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, ECHO, which is a North County nonprofit, and LINC and the Family Care Network, and it was all for rapid rehousing is the project. So that was pretty exciting. We had an information and discussion item from the county representative on behavioral health initiatives, and it was a really long presentation, but basically it's very pro-patient. It has a lot to do with medication and how they can dispense that. And they were really excited about that was something that could really help the patients. And then we had a long presentation on the housing choice vouchers, also known as Section 8. There are no vouchers left in the county for this year. 2,185 vouchers are available. Are earmarked for San Luis Obispo County. Usually only 200 a year open up, and when you think about our whole county, that's not very many at all. What was interesting to learn is that if you have a voucher and you move out of San Luis Obispo County, you take that voucher with you, but we still pay for it. So it goes away to Ohio or wherever, and we lose it in this county. So no one was really happy about learning that. Each year, the rental payments are about $17 million for San Luis Obispo County for the vouchers. The clients stay on the vouchers. I'm not trying to depress you all. I'm just educating you because this was interesting to me. Yeah, clients stay on the vouchers if they're eligible for life. Obviously, they if they violate the stipulations or if they pass away, then the voucher becomes available. They did apply in April for more voucher funding, and maybe June we will know if that was okayed. Let's see. And that was it, really. Thank you. Go ahead.
When you say there's no more vouchers available in the county, does that mean that we placed 2,100 people?
No, because those are our allocation for the county for forever, or you know, until we get more. So some of those vouchers haven't become available in 20 years.
So when you say
200 open up a year, usually.
Oh, you mean
less.
Okay, so 200 open up.
Right.
Not that the units open up, but the 200 vouchers become
available.
Okay,
for people to apply.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then the second question, when you say that we pay for it if they go out of the area, you actually mean we just no longer get the federal funding?
Well, we don't get the voucher. We don't get to use it here.
So out of our allotment, once it goes away, it stays away.
Right, right.
All right, thank you.
Unless someone moves back here. With their voucher from
right.
Ohio.
But, right, pretty expensive to live here, cheaper other places, so mm-hmm. Then they see the vouchers going away, yeah.
Okay. Is there any public comment on the reports?
Aaron Hinkle, Roy Grandy. with reference to the Five Cities Fire Authority, they do a great job. But I would like to see a cost comparison with, like Pismo has, for the state to be able to do it. And not only look at year-to-year costs, but the future costs that we don't show. Because we have pensions that we're going to pay for these people and other things that we're going to pay for that aren't accounted into your year-to-year budget. So I would like to really see a solid apples-to-apples cost comparison for present and future expenses to keep the fire authority the way it is. It's not just us that's paying into this. And there's probably a reason why Pismo didn't join it when we did everything. There must be some reason. So I've asked for this before, and it's gone nowhere. So I would really like to see a real cost comparison. Again, on today's cost, as well as the unfunded liability, which is a big thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment?
A comment, Mr. Guthrie, with the what you call it, a free day pass, is that? I've heard this, and I wanted confirmation. Homeless people are given a free day pass to ride the bus.
So it's not free. What I meant, I hope I didn't say free. It's an all day pass.
Oh, you're right.
The cost of the pass.
I'm asking if there's a free one.
There's not a free pass.
Okay. I was told by somebody that they're allowed to ride the buses.
Services will buy them and give them away. But they're actually purchasing them. In fact, it's total side, but it messes with the fares because social services buy thousands of them at a time.
And so it excuse your numbers,
So yeah, that's what I meant. That
okay.
There is also a disabled person gets a half price pass.
A discount, okay. And then the other comment for Mr. Brown was I was at City Hall and picked up a brochure about the prescription disposal, and it was very handy, and it gave me a website to go to, and it told me every place in the area that took medication, and I took them over to Kmart. So I used to take them to the police department, and now I take
them
to Kmart.
There's a lot of resistance by the pharmacies. They're trying to change it because they don't want to get involved with it.
It's this huge box that I couldn't even fit a big bottle of vitamins in. You know, it's a small opening. So
there's been public fear that having those medications there
will cause break-ins. Or
well, no, it's I won't even go into how crazy it is. But there's just to say there's some public fear about it, and that's been expressed to the pharmacies, and they don't really want to be dealing with it.
Well, I highly recommend the brochure. It helped.
Thank you for the comment.
Ms. Barnage, not to scare us, but you said once somebody gets on something, it is for life? Are you guys looking at cutting that time down to half a lifetime or something? I mean, that just seems ridiculous. If somebody qualifies in their 20s, they get something for the rest of their life. That, to me, is scary. And I don't know if you could answer that right now.
If they qualify, if they remain qualified.
So they have to qualify every year then?
Yes, they have to remain.
Okay.
Right, yeah. If their income goes up, then they, you know, if they, then they're not.
Okay, I missed that. Thank you. Ms. Harmon, we're in negotiations with the fire department. I'd like to see their budget come back because, you know, we pay in, Grover pays in, Oceano pays in, but I'm not sure we've ever really seen what the fire department's budget is. I may have just missed that, but as a resident, I'd like to see where the money's being spent and just have some input on it. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Rudy. Mr. Mayor, councilpersons, my name is Rudy Xavier. I represent no one but myself. I just want to thank the council for taking reasonable action tonight and passing a simple policy. I totally agree with Mr. Mayor that, you know, we've blown this out of proportion, but at least you've resisted all these ideas of, oh, my God, the First Amendment is being eroded and this is going to do that. And I want to take the opportunity to say so how sorry I am that you city staff have to listen to all these snarky comments. And just be aware that as more transparency is forced upon this group, you will not have to put up with this, and they'll see that these kinds of tactics do not work. And City Manager, thank you so much for your work.
Thank you. Okay, moving to Council. I'm sorry.
Just one real quick question with regards to the pharmaceutical and the dispense disposal of medications. I'm wondering, do the medicines need to be in their original containers, or is it okay just to dump them in a Ziploc bag?
I don't remember quite honestly. I don't know that we talked about it in that detail.
Maybe. If the police used to take them, maybe he knows if they are required to be in, so that they can be identified as to what the medication is, or just free-for-all?
In our former box, which, by the way, we were second only to the county as far as collections in Arroyo Grande, they could be disposed of in any way,
okay,
not just in the original container.
Okay. One more.
Good evening. Yes, I'm probably last. Quick question and also a comment. The question regarding the T-bid, and I think I heard you say that it photograph or something was approved, so I'm not quite sure. Did I hear that correctly or not?
Yeah, finally, the decision to do the bus wrap was six months ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken this long to finally get a picture that everybody would agree on.
So when we say everybody, do we mean the T-bid that's the open to the public? That
the recommendation came from the advertising committee, I'll call it, and I think they have a different name than that, but the advertising
committee
recommended to them, and they approved the picture.
And when did they approve it? Because the last meeting I knew about was April 25th or something, and I was at that meeting, and it wasn't on the agenda.
They actually did approve it at that meeting, I believe.
Okay, it's not on the agenda, so I find that interesting. So my comment is, I just wanted to say that Mr. Mayor Hill was very kind in his description of how the sanitation is going, and I can't be that kind. There was a meeting that was abruptly canceled at the last minute due to a lack of a quorum where two people from the city of Grover Beach could not make it a priority to attend, and two people from the area of Oceano could not make it a priority to attend. But our mayor made it a priority to attend because it was canceled at the last minute, and he even came to the meeting room in case anybody showed up. So I would like that on the record for Grover Beach and Oceano to be put on notice that their ratepayers are really suffering because of them.
Okay. Moving on then to council communications. Does anyone have?
I do.
Mayor Pro Tem.
In response to a public comment related to the Five Cities Fire Authority budget, there is a preliminary budget posted for the May 20th meeting. Seems like it was just last week. It was. So that gives you some preliminary information. It includes line item. It also indicates previous and proposed in the changes. So that would be a good reference. But also the council communication that I really have is that because it's time sensitive, I was hoping that we could add the budget, the Five Cities Fire Authority budget for the June 14th agenda, just so I could get direction so we could move that process forward. And that's all the council communication I have for this evening.
I'm against that. I think only because we got. I'm against that only because we got so much on the agenda. I understand it's time sensitive, but maybe we need to do a special meeting. Maybe we need to do more than one. I don't know. But again, I'm not going to vote to go past 11 o'clock. So.
Well, I think we received an email. I received an email that laid out everything that's happening in June, and that was on the June 14th agenda, tentative agenda.
I'm not sure if that was included in the email, but I'm looking at the advance agenda, and I have a note to add it to the 14th.
It's right here on the, you sent it to us on May 19th, Mayor Hill and Council, and it goes over all the special meetings that we are most likely going to be having on June 13th. And then it talks about the regular city council meetings, tentative regular agenda items, and the FCFA budget is on June 14th.
And it probably needs to be because of it, you know, it being a budget item and July 1st coming up. So.
Okay.
Just making it official.
Okay, sorry.
Just very briefly, I have seen Kevin McBride at Diablo Canyon. It's great to see him there. Seems to be doing very well. We're nearing the end of the power plant outage, and thanks to all my colleagues there for the good work that they do. With regard to the Times Press Recorder, I'm sorry to see that they're ceasing publication. I want to thank our long-term reporter there, April Charlton, for the good work that she's done covering the city over the years, and hopefully she'll continue with the Santa Maria Times and that they'll continue to cover the city. But we appreciate her work over the years, so thank you to April. With that, we have several closed session items, and I'll request that the city attorney announce the closed sessions and then invite public comment on the closed session items.
Thank you, Your Honor. We have 5 items on the closed session agenda this evening. The complete agenda descriptions are, of course, on the agenda, which is available in the back. But I will summarize them for you. The first is a conference with Real Property Negotiator. The property is 202 LaPointe Street in Arroyo Grande. Agency Negotiator, City Manager Diane Thompson. Negotiating parties, John and Maureen Gutierrez, discussing price and terms of payment. We also have a Real Property Conference with Negotiator at 132 LaPointe Street. Again, with Diane Thompson and the negotiating party on the other side, Sonny Jacobson, discussing price and terms of payment. The third is a conference with labor negotiator, the agency designated representative, Diane Thompson, city manager, represented employees are the Arroyo Grande Police Officers Association. The fourth is a conference with labor negotiator, agency representative, Diane Thompson, city manager, unrepresented employees are the management employees. The fifth item is a conference involving a joint powers agency, the Five Cities Fire Authority, a conference to discuss their conference with labor negotiators, their agency negotiators, Shalene Bennett, Debbie Malicote, and Chanel Hubbard. The represented employees are International Association of Firefighters Local 4403. The local agency rep on the Five Cities Fire Authority Board is Barbara Harmon, and additional attendee Diane Thompson, City Manager. The council will be adjourning to closed session, but first we will take public comment on any of those items.
So at this time, is there any public comment on the closed session items?
I'm going to be honest, this isn't about closed session, but this is why I think that public comment should have been left on the agenda. So if you will let me speak, this is very important, I feel, and I've been waiting since the city manager gave her report. May I proceed?
We can have closing comment if you wish, but please be brief.
Devin Ward, who suffers from ALS, has been here to advocate for medical marijuana because it aids him with pain as he dies from a terrible disease. I wonder sometimes if anybody from the city really cares, because I had a staff member tell me not to worry about Devin Ward. He's been here before. He'll be here again. Do you see Devin Ward here? No. The reason is Devin Ward has gotten progressively ill. He's been in the hospital and had to have a feeding tube inserted. Devin was brave to stand up here and to say, I need cannabis. We have elderly patients who use medical marijuana. They don't want to be on camera and be judged for using a drug that others think get them high. I have a great analogy about medical marijuana versus recreational marijuana. It's like drinking an O'Doul's non-alcoholic beer or enjoying a full-bodied ale. One gets you buzzed, one doesn't. We have cannabis in our community right now. It is the recreational stuff. We even have a doctor right here in the village who's writing prescriptions. What we don't have is the 20% sales tax that is normally put on top of the medical marijuana. Part of this needs to go back to the Planning Commission. And I'm wondering, how long have we known that? The Planning Commission canceled the Planning Commission that was scheduled for the 19th of this month. Would have been a perfect time to talk about it. To watch a loved one die, that is something that never leaves you. Never. I don't care what they die of. What gets you through it is knowing you did everything in your power to keep them comfortable, safe, and out of fear. You walked with them as far as you could on the path they were on, and you loved them, supported them, and you learned to say goodbye. And you always wonder, after they are gone, could have I done more? I'm doing more now, because there are so many who need an advocate. Do the right thing for those who need medical marijuana delivered to their homes. Do the right thing for Devin Ward. I am going to ask you to do a special meeting. The 14th is packed. There are people in our community who need this drug. Please show compassion.
Thank you. Is there any comment on the closed session items? Okay, hearing none, we'll move to the closed session.